Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, March 4th, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another radio station or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our access code is 449-389-POUND. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions, plural, nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. All right, we're going to pick up on tonight's scripture reading where we left off last week. We'll be picking up in the Gospel of John, chapter 13. I'm going to read verses 12 through 20. So, Gospel of John, chapter 13, 12 through 20. Just quickly look. Okay. All right, verse 12. So after he had washed their feet and had taken his garment and was set down again, he said unto them, Know ye what I have done to you? Ye call me Master and Lord, and ye say, Well, for so I am. I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet. Ye also might ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example, that ye should do as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that has sent him. If you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. I speak not of you all, I know whom I have chosen, but that the scripture might be fulfilled, He that eateth bread with me hath lifted up his heel against me. Now I tell you before it come, that when it comes to pass, ye may believe that I am he. Truly, truly, I say unto you, he that receiveth whomsoever I send receiveth me, and he that receiveth me receiveth him that sent me. All right, that was John chapter 13. Verses 11 through 20. All right, tonight we're going to take a look. I don't think we're going to spend that much time, maybe about 15 minutes. We're going to look at another paper that we have put together. It's a memorandum. I didn't have time to really get that up online yet. Maybe I could try to do that Maybe we'll take questions first. Are there any questions, Jan, or any announcements? Maybe we'll go there first, and then we'll come and we'll look at the United States Supreme Court abuse of the 10th Amendment.
Yes, we have several questions. If you want to take them, we'll start you out with this one. What happens when you, the defendant, now the counter plaintiff, requires or demands that the plaintiff to step forward and identify themselves? The plaintiff, the state, county, or some other fictitious entity does not exist in the physical, must step forward and state their name. How can that happen?
Well, of course they can't, but again, they're not going to pay any attention to that. They'll continue forward. I know with Bill Thornton, when he was teaching on Title 26, as far as the tax court is concerned, mentioned that it was a court of record. And I did look that up, and it does say that it's a court of record. It's very strange that they call it a court of record because it's all statutory, and courts of record are not statutes. Any court that proceeds according to statutes, any court that's called a criminal court, if it's called a civil court, it cannot be a court of record. Even if they have a jury, it still wouldn't be a court of record because it would be a statutory jury, a jury obedient to the statutes. So again, it cannot be a court of record. I'm getting some feedback. I'm not sure. Is that coming through you, Jan? Let me see. Yeah, I think it was. I guess she muted herself. Anyway, so it's a court of record. Now, he had mentioned that whenever you go into tax court, there's an individual or two that sits there on the other side over by the prosecutor that remains silent. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what he claims. And that individual is there representing the court as king and making the claim upon the court according to the rules that he brings forward. And, of course, that is, it's not lawful. It's not the process we have. And I don't doubt Bill Thornton on that idea. As a matter of fact, I know he's used that idea in front of judges, and he's been able to get through with some things there. But anyway, so the individual in the tax court is supposed to be there and supposed to represent as the king. So when a charge is brought against someone and they go forward in the courts, I know there's a lot of things being taught out there by people who are teaching, you know, that you can deny certain things or deny becoming part of something, claim a lot of different things, you know, the man on the land, your flesh and blood, and so on and so forth. But it's not going to get us anywhere. We have to defeat the problem. The whole thing's a fraud. We have to defeat the problem. And that, of course, is what we're trying to do here at National Liberty Alliance with our next case. I've given a lot of thought on how we're going to go forward with this case, and we've got some unique ideas, which we're not going to really get into detail until we actually do the filing. But meanwhile, we are writing these memorandums, which, by the way, I did upload the memorandum. The memorandum we're going to look at tonight is a Tenth Amendment memorandum. Let's see what it's named. Let me see what the file name is on this. Yeah, Memorandum Amendment 10. So if anybody wants to download that now, you can find it up on National Liberty Alliance. And it should be under, let's see, the grand jury, and click on Action Against the Jury, and it should be there. All right, any other questions there, Jan?
Yes, the second one. In the Government by Consent course, I read this. We, the people, vested Congress with certain law-making powers in Article 1, Section 8, among which we gave no legislative powers to write ordinances, regulations, codes, or statutes that would control the behavior of we the people or apply any set punishment upon we the people. That authority belongs to the people. I read my Constitution and did not find anything in there stating that we gave no legislative powers to write ordinances. What did I miss?
Well, that's true in the ordinances. I didn't. If I did put the word ordinance, then that would be an error. I'm pretty sure I put the word regulation. I'll have to take a look. If anybody knows exactly where that's at, we'll try to correct that. But I'm pretty sure it was statutes, codes, and statutes, codes, and what was the third one I mentioned?
You have regulations.
Regulations. Yeah. But I don't ever remember using the word ordinances. That doesn't even come up anywhere. So, but look at it. It's as far as I'm not sure exactly what they might be talking about unless they misread that. But look at. We gave Congress certain powers, and you can find those certain powers generally in Article 1, Section 8. There may be, and according to Article 1, Section 9, there's restrictions. And there may be a few other things in the Constitution that gives them a little more power. I forget exactly, read through the other articles. But generally speaking, that's their lawmaking powers. And there were 18 powers, I believe, that they have. And for all those powers, they had the authority to write law. We find those authorities or those powers or those laws that they write under U.S. codes and titles 1 through 54. So all in there is pretty much all their authority as far as ruling in the statutory courts. But each one of them have their own jurisdiction. Okay, And remember, at least half of those titles really identify with regulations to deal with the situations in an administrative process in different government agencies. You know, the president alone, I think he's in Article 3, the powers of the president that are given by Congress to the president that are constitutional powers. I believe you'll find that in Article 3 or 8, but I'm pretty sure it's 3. So again, each article has its own jurisdiction. Article 18, which is where you'll find the penal code, is the law of the sea. It's maritime law. If you look through it, you'll find the jurisdiction as being there. So they don't have the authority, and they don't have the authority to, you know, govern our behavior. Consider the fact that we the people ordained and established. Think of those words, we the people ordained and established this Constitution for them. So we are the lawmakers. We the people make the law, and we're at liberty from those laws. They have no power or authority to make any kind of what's called positive law, also known as human law, also known as codes and statutes, to control our behavior or anything that we do. Now, of course, there's certain commercial activities that we've given Congress powers to write laws concerning certain commercial activities, and so it governs those things. But as long as we're not participating in a commercial activity or involved in any of the other jurisdictions where we would have to, by dealing in those jurisdictions and participating, we'd be giving them consent within their administrative process or their lawmaking process. And again, they have two things. One's called positive law, and the other really is just administrative procedures and really filled with regulations and procedures that the government employees will have to follow. Okay, what else you got?
I don't have any more questions. I do have one announcement. Ron okay. Flick sent me some information, which I put in a newsletter a week ago, on the Welcome Committee, and at the end of it he asked people to email him if they were interested in working with him, but he gave me the wrong email address. It should be ron@nationallibertyalliance.org, not .com. So if you want to get a hold of Ron, please use ron@nationallibertyalliance.org. And that's all that I had, really, John.
Okay. All right. We are writing memorandums. We've had some written, and we're going through them and, perfecting them a little better. You know, as you study more and more and look into things more and more, of course, you find little errors or misinterpretations here or there. Nothing major that we've necessarily found, but, you know, clean things up. And so we've rewritten some of the memorandums and are continuing to rewrite some of those. And we've got some new memorandums putting together. Each one of this deals with a particular issue. And so it supports an issue or position in law inside of our action at law that we're going to be filing concerning the judiciary. And again, the details of how we're going to approach this, I'm not really going to get into. We'll get into that when we actually do the filing. But last 2 weeks, actually, we read a memorandum, half of one 2 weeks ago and the other half last week. This week, we're going to be reading through a memorandum. And if anybody has any questions or comments on this or the one that we read through last week, you know, we'll take questions later on that. But it's about the U.S. Supreme Court's abuse of the 10th Amendment. Much of what the Supreme Court has been making decisions on over the years is not lawful. They don't have the authority to do so. They are really treading upon the rights of the states and the people. And I think tonight we're going to make certain points clear. And, of course, again, it's up for discussion. Anybody has any questions or comments on these things. But, again, if we haven't given them the authority, if they don't have the jurisdiction, then they don't have the authority and they don't have the jurisdiction. The Constitution is very clear on what authority they have, what authority we gave to the Congress, what authority we gave to the judiciary and what we gave to, of course, to the executive. Okay, so we're going to take a look at this. Again, it's the United States Supreme Court's abuse of the 10th Amendment. I know there was another point I wanted to bring up before we looked into this, but it slipped my mind. I don't see anything on notes here. Okay, but anyway, we'll talk about it after we get to that point. So let's take a look at this. If you want to follow along, you can get a copy of this up on nationallibertyalliance.org. Highlight grand jury, come down and click action against the judiciary, and you'll see some memorandums in there. And the memorandum we're going to be reading is Memorandum Amendment 10. I'm looking at some of the other memorandums, and I believe we've perfected those, but I'll double-check on those as time goes on, and we'll be looking at some of those over the next coming weeks. Okay, so again, the 10th Amendment and the United States Supreme Court. Memorandum of Law, United States Supreme Court's Abuse, the 10th Amendment. The purpose of this memorandum is to clarify the judicial powers of the federal courts from the powers not delegated to them. A key issue in point that was a direct assault on the 10th Amendment, where the people are to decide through courts of justice, is abortion, which is a natural law issue and not a positive or legislated law issue that was unconstitutionally adjudicated by the United States Supreme Court, which is an equity court governed by codes and statutes, which then brings the issue into its proper jurisdiction, a natural law court of record adjudicated by the King's Bench, which is the jury of we the people, made up of 12 people who are to mirror the will of nature's God, answering to him alone. The United States Supreme Court does not have the authority to think like God's adversary, that they can change God's law. Daniel 7:25, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change the times and the laws. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor forbidden by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. 10th Amendment. In a letter to William Jabez, Thomas Jefferson wrote, "The assumption of sovereign power and the institution of government by consent are acts of transcendent authority, which the people alone are competent to perform. And accordingly, it is in the name and by the authority of the people that the judiciary was vested." In a letter to Judge Spencer Roan, Thomas Jefferson wrote, "You seem to consider the judges as the ultimate arbiters of all constitutional questions, a very dangerous doctrine indeed, and one which would place us under the despotism of an oligarchy. Our judges are as honest as other men, and not more so, and their power is even more dangerous. As they are in office for life, and are not responsible, as the other functionaries are, to the elective control. The Constitution has erected no such single tribunal, knowing that to whatever hands confide with the corruptions of time and party, its members would become despots. And today, the Constitution is a mere thing of wax in the hands of the judiciary, and which they may twist and shape into any form they please." In a letter to Thomas Ritchie, Thomas Jefferson wrote, "The judiciary of the United States is the subtle corp of sappers and miners, constantly working underground to undermine the foundation of our Confederate fabric. They are construing a constitution from coordination of a general and special government to a general and supreme one alone. This will lay all things at their feet, and they are too well vested in English law to forget the maxim, good judges have ample jurisdiction. a judiciary independent of the king or executive alone is a good thing, but independent of the will of the nation is an error, at least in the Republican government. The original error was in establishing a judiciary independent of the nation and which of the strongholds of the law can turn its guns on those they were meant to defend and control and fashion their proceedings to its own will. And so it went, but it could have been prevented. If it were not for the people being lulled to sleep through political parties, as we unwittingly yielded judicial control into the hands of the treacherous bar, and over time we lost our most important anchor of government by consent, a free and independent jury that has the power to have prevented the unlawful advances of the judiciary despots. Let us remind our servants of who they are and the consequences of their behavior should they not retreat back under the change of the Constitution. We, the people, vested Congress with the authority to write the law within the criteria of Article 1. We, the people, vested the United States Supreme Court in Article 3 to protect the unalienable rights of the people and act as an appellate court to the inferior federal district court. We, the people, vested Congress in Article 1 with the authority to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. We, the people, vested these inferior courts with jurisdictions over Congress's presently established 54 U.S.C. title legislated under Article 1, Section 8, and to champion the unalienable rights of the people. Search the Constitution. We did not vest federal courts with the authority to decide people's behavior, political issues, or criminal cases, with the exception of counterfeiting, piracies, and felonies on the high sea. The following is the short list of 10th Amendment tyrannical federal judiciary violations and the seizing of jurisdictions never vested to them and the interfering with the numerous issues that clearly belong to the states, respectively, and the people. Court ruling to stop the people's referendum, English, as their official language. Court ruling to stop the people's referendum to stop state-funded taxpayer services to illegal aliens. Court ruling to stop the people's referendum not to give special rights to homosexuals. Court ruling to stop the people's referendum to defeat a tax increase. Court ruling to stop people's referendum to limit contributions to state candidates. Court ruling to stop the people's referendum against physician-assisted suicide. Court ruling to stop the people's referendum to define a marriage as between one man and one woman. Court ruling to stop state legislation for term limits for politicians. Court ruling to stop legislation for a woman's right to know the law concerning abortion. Court ruling to stop state legislators for a marriage amendment. Court ruling to stop state legislators for marriage laws. Federal district courts betray the people by denying the very rights they took as an oath to uphold, protect, and defend. Court's denial of Amendment 1, the unalienable right to petition the government for redress of grievances. Court's denial of Amendment 2, the unalienable right of the people to keep and bear arms. Court's denial of Amendment 4, the unalienable right of the people to be secured in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures. Court's denial, Amendment 5, the unalienable right to a natural law grand jury not to be put into double jeopardy and not to be a witness against oneself. Court denial, 6th Amendment, of the unalienable right to an impartial jury and a non-bar assistance of counsel. Court's denial, Amendment 7, the unalienable right of the common law grand jury or trial jury and a natural law jurisdiction. Court's denial, Amendment 10, the state and the people's right of powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution. Politically motivated federal court judges seized control of political issues stealing state jurisdictions, interfering with executive duties, serving foreign interests, and advancing progressivism, liberty's greatest enemy. Court legalizing murder via abortion that natural law will not permit. Court interfering with the president's constitutional duties to protect our borders that the executive powers will not permit. Court claiming jurisdiction covertly under maritime jurisdiction for criminal cases under USC Title 18 that natural law will not permit. Court adjudicating prescription laws within the states that the 10th Amendment will not permit. Courts adjudicating marijuana laws within the state that the 10th Amendment will not permit. Court forcing same-sex marriages rights upon the states that the 10th Amendment will not permit. Court creating and harboring a tax court that Article 1, Section 8 and 9 will not permit. Court concealing the people's unalienable right of natural law courts via the rules of the court. Court marginalized the science of government by consent by seizing control of the grand and petit juries through covert means. Clearly, the aforesaid violations are an attack upon our republic, whereas the judiciary is using our courts to advance progressivism, whose end game is socialism. Thomas Jefferson said, "At the establishment of our Constitution, the judiciary bodies were supposed to be the most helpless and harmless members of the government. Experience, however, soon showed in what way they were to become the most dangerous. A judiciary independent of a king or executive alone is a good thing, but independent of the will of the nation is a mistake, at least in a republican government. The seed of dissolution of our federal government is in the Constitution of the federal judiciary. An irresponsible body, for impeachment is scarcely a scarecrow, working like gravity by night and by day, gaining a little today and a little tomorrow, and advancing its noiseless step like a thief over a field of jurisdiction until all shall be usurped." Thomas Jefferson again said, "The candid citizen must confess that if the policy of government upon vital questions affecting the whole people is to be irrevocably fixed by decisions of the Supreme Court, the instant they are made in ordinary litigation between parties and personal actions, the people will have ceased to be their own rulers, having too the extent practically resigned their government into the hands of that eminent tribunal." Article 3, Section 1 states, "The judges both of the Supreme Court and Inferior Court shall hold their offices during good behavior. And if Congress cannot find the backbone to impeach judges for bad behavior, then we the people will via indictments." Conclusion. Equity cases. All equity cases under the Acts of Congress are tried in federal district courts. The United States Supreme Court is an appellate court and is the final arbiter and interpreter of all positive law cases, that's legislated cases, appealed out of the federal district courts. They are also the final arbitrator in the constitutionalities of all codes and statutes and acts of Congress when challenged. Law cases. The United States Supreme Court, being the highest court in the land, is final arbiter of all cases concerning any rights violations arising out of any court of the land. Therefore, when a case is moved into a federal court district for a rights violation cause, said federal district court is expected to champion the unalienable rights of the people. If the district court fails to secure the rights of the people, the case can be appealed in the United States Supreme Court as the final arbiter. Case in point. Any village, city, town, county, state, or federal court that violates the people's right of due process, when such a violation is brought before the federal district court, it is expected to order the lower courts to cease and desist if they are are incapable of providing due process or to not have jurisdiction. As far as the issues of the case are concerned, the Federal District Court and the United States Supreme Court has no jurisdiction to hear the case. If the inferior court can survive the challenge, the case must be returned to the trial court for adjudication on the facts. The judiciary is in bad behavior and is to immediately cease their lawless jurisdictional advances to spread their social agenda or suffer the consequences of indictment for subversion and conspiracy of treason. Grand jury form. Okay. All right. And I guess we don't have any more questions, so we'll discuss these issues if anybody has any questions or comments about that memorandum. And again, you can get a copy of that up on nationallibertyalliance.org underneath grand jury. And let me just look real quick to see again where that's at under grand jury action against the judiciary. And again, you know, as soon as we get all these memorandums done, and we're working on them day and night for quite some time now, we got about 20 of them. Matter of fact, we got over 20 of them. I don't know whether we're going to use all 20 of them. I think we are, but we'll see where we go. But all of these are issues that we need to bring up against the judiciary. They're overstepping their authority. They're denying the authority that they do have, that they should be doing, the things that they should be doing. And so we'll see where that goes, how it goes. But again, after we finish all these memorandums, we will be writing the case itself. But that action that we are writing, we are actually writing at the same time we're doing the memorandum. So, you know, they should pretty much be completed together. I'm hoping in the next couple of weeks we'll be done with it. Again, it depends on timing and, you know, how much time we can spend staying on this particular issue. We do have other things that we need to be dealing with. And of course, this also affects the completion of the course that we've been writing. Because we're working right now still on the Constitution and the amendments. And a lot of these issues are also going to come to play with that part of the work that we're working on, which is to complete the course. And again, you know, the book we're writing that will probably come out soon after we finish the course and get this paper particularly done. Again, that is also being written at the same time because all these subject matters are going to be in the book as much as it's going to be in the course. Okay, with that, if there's nothing else, I guess we'll move on to Brent. Brent, are you here and ready? I see him here. Yep. Okay.
Yes.
All right, we're going to move over to Brent Winters. Brent Winters is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Hey, Brent.
Thanks. This is Brent. Website, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And the comments I make here are my own. They're mine alone. I don't try to attach them to anybody else that may be on this call. I spend my time hibernating and trying to dig things out. It's an addiction by this time, so I'm stuck with it. Hope somebody can use what I find and what I then pass on to you. We've been going through the Constitution of the United States. First, we went through the Declaration of 76, clause by clause and blow by blow. Then we moved on to the Constitution of the United States. These two documents have always, habitually, and even just customarily, have always been published together, and for good reason. Without the real case in controversy the Declaration of 76 presents, then the Constitution of the United States is no more than a dry and dispirited skeleton of words. And if you read the Constitution of the United States, pretty dry reading, unless you see what breathes life into it and what gives it a story. Without a story, there's no life. Without a life, there's no story, too. Men make stories. Stories are about men's lives. What drives them, their passions. When you read through the Declaration of 76, you see the passion behind the whole thing. And you see the story of loss of freedom, of plundering and pillaging and murder. It tells it in a legal way. It is a common law complaint, so to speak, of a real case in controversy. Our Constitution of the United States requires that all cases that go into court must be real cases and controversies. That phrase, real cases and controversies, is a phrase from our common law tradition going back many centuries. And what it says is you can't get into a federal court. Of course, you can't get into a court anywhere in the country unless you allege that there's been a real case where there's real damage, where somebody's been bloodied up or lost life, liberty, property, or a combination thereof. Then you can get into court. You can't go to a court and file a piece of paper and say, if this, and this happens, how would you rule, Mr. Judge? He'll throw it out. He won't listen to it. Yeah, there has to be a real damage there, a real plaintiff who's complaining about getting hurt somehow, economically, physically, that kind of thing. Well, our Constitution of the United States is spirited by the Declaration of 76. So when we read it, we can find in our Constitution, throughout our Constitution, subject matter of particular points that the Declaration of 76 complains about. Why is that? Well, it's because in a common law country, awash in the common law tradition and all of the customs written and unwritten that go with it, men live and move and breathe with that in their minds. And back to the time when our country started, people were very conscious of what separated themselves, differentiated them from all of the rest of the world. And it still differentiates us from all the rest of the world. And that is our common law tradition. It's not a list of laws as much as it is just a way of thinking. We could give our common law tradition to another country and they'd never use it. The reason they never use it is because deep down in their heart of hearts, which is religion, by the way, everybody's got it, and what your deepest convictions are, as the Supreme Court says, those considerations that go to the ultimate questions of human existence, when it gets right down to it, those other countries, they like the law of the city. They like a dictator. They're used to it. They've had it for generations. They'll have nothing else. A one-man show kind of a government. That's why all of South America is that way, and all of Mexico, because of their deepest religious convictions. Almost to a man, that's what they like. They like an emperor, a dictator, somebody they can look up to and tell them what to do. Of course, priesthoods are real good at that. That's what they live for. Trouble with priesthoods is they always, without exception, wind up sexually abusing children and women. That's what priesthoods are for. That's what they've always been for since the founding of Babylon. They never changed, and they continue that way. We just know more about it now. It's never changed. This is nothing new. We just know more about it because of the Internet. As Jefferson said, Christianity is a great religion, as long as it's not clothed in the rags of priesthood, like it is in some places. Here we are, Constitution of the United States, Section 8 of Article 1, and we're going to talk about Clauses 11 through 16. A word about Clauses 11 through 16. These clauses empower the Congress of the United States to provide for the common defense. As it says up there, as the preamble says at the beginning of the document, while also restricting Congress's power respecting war. In interpreting and applying our Constitution, one must distinguish the two terms, provide and promote. Our preamble of our Constitution says that this Constitution is written so that there can be a more perfect union, a more perfected, a better union of the states, and that the welfare would be promoted and national defense would be provided, not the other way around. You're not supposed to promote the national defense and provide welfare. You're supposed to provide national defense and promote welfare. And so we've got that upside down in this country by this time, since the days of Roosevelt and all of his socialist and communist programs. According to the preamble, the purpose of our Constitution is to provide for the common defense, but merely promote the general welfare. There's a difference between welfare, particular welfare, and general welfare. The word general, as it's used throughout all writings of legal significance and probably most other places, it always means the same thing. It means without exception. The word general means without exception. You know, we misuse it sometimes if we're not speaking in terms of legal context. We say things like, well, generally speaking. Well, that when we say that, we mean generally speaking. We mean, in most cases anyway, well, that's not what this word general means in writings of legal significance, such as the Constitution. General means in all cases, without exception. That's why our forebearers, I don't like to call them our fathers because we're not all descended from these people. We use the word fathers, though, to say people who went before us. So I guess you can say that. But our forebears said that the government that our Constitution of the United States establishes, they said that that government is the general government. They didn't say it's the national government. They didn't say it's the federal government. That would have been a foreboding thing to say to a lot of people because it sounds so dictatorial, so centralized. The federales, as the Mexicans would say, or the South Americans and Spanish. And, of course, the Southern troops during that nasty, ugly war that we had in our country, they called the general government the federal government because federos means head, centralization, it's a Latin word. So the general welfare means a welfare that goes to everybody without exception, you see. Particular welfare, the general government in Washington, D.C., has no authority to distribute particular welfare. What's particular? Well, particular welfare is to these folk here and not those folk over there, or this guy here and not these people over there. That's called particular welfare. General welfare, general, means without exception. So if the Congress of the United States says we're going to give food stamps to everybody in the country without exception, that's general welfare. But if the Congress of the United States says, well, we only want to give food stamps to those that do not make this much money, and if they swear to it, we'll give them food stamps, that, friends, neighbors, and kin, is particular welfare. And the Constitution of the United States grants no authority to the government in Washington, D.C., the general government, to do that. No, what they do must be general. And that's what the Constitution says for a very important reason. And the reason is that the states don't want Congress to favor one group over another or one particular locale or one state or one group or one nationality or one color of people over another. They thought that would be grossly unfair, and they even said that would be, well, it would be lawless, and we're living in that kind of lawlessness. Well, what if there's a national disaster? Can we distribute particular welfare there? Well, the Constitution of the United States doesn't allow that. No, it doesn't. Not in the way that it's done. Now, there are the exception to the rule establishes the rule in case it's not accepted. In other words, if there is an exception to the rule, it's not an exception to the rule, really. It's something that strengthens the rule. That's another subject of equity. But there's a difference between general and particular. I'll leave it at that and not go into the details because I want to get through the Constitution sometime this year. We're going slow. I don't want to just buzz through it. Well, according to the preamble, we talked about the difference between general welfare and government promotes general welfare by limiting itself to the powers and processes our Constitution lists. Thus, the President of the United States states must never wage war without our Constitution's required declaration of war from Congress. However, some presidents seek to provide the general welfare, they do that, while merely promoting the common defense. Others allow the president to wage war without Congress's required consent, namely his newly passed declaration of war. If you say, Brent, you lost me. I don't understand what you're saying. Well, the reason you don't understand what I'm saying is because it's not understandable. It's a mess. It's lawlessness. It's messy. You can't make sense of it. I was listening to a man that was a prisoner of war for 6.5 years approximately in North Vietnam. He tells his story about getting shot down, and they didn't expect it to happen. It happened. Next thing you know, he's being stripped naked and hauled and tied up and hauled in the truck to Hanoi, where he, of course, eventually enters the Hanoi Hilton, and they took him in for interrogation. And he said, they said to him, you're going to be treated just like what you are. What am I? You, sir, are a war criminal. He said, well, how do you figure I'm a war criminal? You fellas signed on to the Geneva Convention. There's certain things you can't do to me. They said, well, that's right, yeah. We signed on the Geneva Convention. The Geneva Convention applies to war. He said, they said to this fellow, has your country declared war on us? He said, no. He said, then you're a war criminal. You have no business here. If your country hasn't declared war, why are you here? Well, now, not to justify what they did, but on the other hand, there's a point to be made there. As the Romans used to say, it's good to learn even from your enemies. So it should be a wake-up. That's right. If Congress has not declared war, and they're the only ones that have authority to declare war, then what are we doing in these other places? Now, if Congress wants to declare war, and we go in and end the matter, and take charge of the land for however long we think is necessary. If we think it's justified going to war, Congress will make that decision, not the President of the United States. This is madness, what we've been doing since World War II, and hundreds of thousands of dead boys, now even in the most egregious, demonic way, girls, legs blown off, put them up as poster children, to get other girls to go sign up and have their legs blown off. I ain't no part of this. I hope you aren't. But it comes down to the simple principle of not being lawless. And the way to do that is to follow law. We have a good law. We probably have the best law for our general government in Washington, D.C. that any country has ever had. It's called the Constitution of the United States. You say, well, it's a flawed document. Oh, I find flaws in it, what I consider flaws. It's not perfect. No, it's not perfect. Certainly not the Bible. But it is our expression, our agreed expression of what we agree is consonant with the Bible. There are places here where I think it isn't. But it was an agreement about how to put the rubber on the road and put into action the first principles of the only true lawgiver from whose decision there is no meaningful appeal. Well, the following clauses, 11 through 16, tell Congress the process due before waging war. That's what these clauses, 11 through 16, do. The process due. You see, everything at common law is due process. Common law does not include due process. Common law is due process. Common law is all about how we do things, not even so much what we do. Because if we concentrate on the how, then what we do will take care of itself. This is ingenious. It is the way we do things, and that's why I like to say the Bible talks about the way. Jesus Christ said, he didn't say I'm a list of laws, he said I'm the way. And the Old Testament says that the Torah of God, the law, is the way things are to be done. And within that way, it says there are the paths of the law. Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote a famous piece. You can probably find it on the Internet. I think you'd enjoy reading it. The name of it, you can look it up, is Paths of the Law. It's not a book. It's a law review article, if I remember right, called Paths of the Law. And then there was another fellow, a couple of fellows that wrote, no, just one, he wrote a law review article, it's been 30 years ago, don't remember his name, but the name of it, I've got it around here somewhere, is called Of Law and the River. Of Law and the River. And he analogizes our common law to the piloting of a riverboat, as he came to understand it, reading a book by Mark Twain called Life on the Mississippi. Life on the Mississippi is the best book that Mark Twain ever wrote, in my humble opinion. And I've probably read Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn 10 times apiece. They're both good. This one's even better. But in that book, he describes in great detail at one point the piloting of a riverboat, his training, how he does it. And the main thing is you're on a course that you have to follow. And within that course are paths, chutes, sandbars, things you got to watch for, but also chutes and channels that are different. You can choose which one you want depending upon where you are and the season and how high the river is. You're moving forward because law is a course to be followed. That's why our organic document, the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, says that the course of the common law shall be followed in these territories, because our common law is a course. It's not a list of laws. It's a way of life and a way of living and a way of walking. And it is different than everyone else in the world. And we are by far and away here in America more of a common law country than Canada to the north, than Australia down under, than New Zealand, Tasmania, Northern Ireland, England, and definitely more than India. It's just because of the English influence. We are blessed right down to our socks, like no country has ever been blessed with a law before, like Israel. Israel said of itself, no country, no people has ever been given a law like our law. Well, that was true. And amazingly, that's been the influence to us, of course. Our first fathers took that very serious. We've taken it serious ever since. I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I've been trying to catalog all the times that our courts in the last just 70 years, in the last 70 years, I consider that modern time, that's pretty much my lifetime. But how often courts in the United States have quoted or cited the Bible to support their decisions? I'm up to over 400, almost 5 now. And that's just in modern times, not going back to when folks were even more conscious of what the Bible had to say. We are a prudish people to most of the world. I've had people tell me that, even from New Zealand, said, Brent, you don't understand how prudish you Americans look to the rest of the world. I said, what do you mean? Well, you people all over the world, even us in New Zealand, we're a Christian country. We know that you folks really do believe the Bible in a way nobody else does. Of course, I look around and I say, well, that's pretty thin. I don't see a lot of that going on, not like I used to, but but we are more so than others, and let's do something with it. Something. Let's see. It's about waging war. Section 8, Clause 11. Well, let me say this before I begin. Congress can call out to wage war by declaring war. And Congress, only Congress, is to have the power to fund war, and only Congress has the power to provide rules to govern our armed forces while they're waging war. You see, war, the yea and nay of war, is Congress's business, not the president's. The funding of war is Congress's business, not the president's. That's why we got to get rid of this money-making machine called the Federal Reserve Bank. As long as that's in place, Congress doesn't control the purse and no longer can cut off the money to wage war, you see. This is the evil empire has found ways around law, and it's destroying us. Section 8, Clause 11, Congress has the power to declare war, grant letters of mark and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water. I think I did go through this, and I don't want to repeat it again. I remember going through this now, a few weeks ago, just mentioning the things about it. Letters of mark and reprisal, that's a piece of paper that the federal government, the general government, would give to a privateer who has a ship to go out and plunder and be a pirate against our enemies, which you ought to have permission before you do it. That's all they're saying. And people did that a lot, especially, well, in our past wars, very often. And then also, when I say letters of mark and reply at price, well, yes, I went through this. Let's go down to Section 8, Clause 12. Congress has the power to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. This is striking. Congress has the power to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to do so can extend further than 2 years. Wow. This clause is to keep the purse strings in the grip of Congress and out of the hands of the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, namely the President of the United States. And as far back as Magna Carta, that's the year 1215, and even further, only the British and the English gatherings of elders had right to declare war. You see, this whole idea of having a Congress to declare war is an ancient common law concept. The ancient kings of the tribes of Northern Europe, which were the ones that transferred what we call today our common law to the island of Britain, and then it was taken to the New World, to America. Even in the most ancient days, the king didn't really have much power at all until war was declared. And a body of elders, analogous to our Congress of the United States, only the body of elders, the Witengemot, Witten means white, and Gemot means meeting. And Witengemot, in Anglo-Saxon, Anglo-Dane tongue, meant the meeting of the white-bearded men. The old men, they had the power to declare war. Soldiers, young men, didn't have the power to declare war. The old men had the power to declare war. And once they did, they gave extra power for that purpose to the king. We have abandoned that to a great degree here in America. Our executive, that's what they call the king, is the president. Well, they gathered in those ancient days. I'm giving you the history of how this worked. We're talking back before the year 800, 700, 600, back in the 3rd and 4th centuries when the angels, the Saxons and the Jutes begin to come to Britain. They empowered their king. They chose him. He wasn't hereditary, by the way. Even William Blackstone says in his commentaries that the kingship of England, it's not clear that it is hereditary. As a matter of fact, our history says that it isn't. And you can point to plenty of examples of that. But before the Norman invasion, it was always an elected position chosen not by the people at large, but by the Witengemot, the body of elders. The body of elders. And it is of great significance that is the government that the Bible presents throughout the Older and the Newer Testament as the only legitimate government for God's people. Traditionally, in Christendom, it's called rule by an eldership, a body, a plurality of elders, of white-bearded men. Men don't wear beards like they used to, but white-headed anyway. The older fellows are to make the decisions together, not any one ruler. I just read recently about, and this is the Assemblies of God. They have a government that is not biblical as most charismatic churches, Pentecostal-type churches. It's a one-man show. And the Assemblies of God are very big in Canada. And the head of the Assembly of God, it's a one-man show, it was discovered he was part of a very large pedophilia ring. That's what happens when you give men power. They have money, they have power, and then they get to thinking they're something they aren't. And they can do what they want. And inevitably, they will. Again, we're blessed that we have the machinery in place to take away that kind of power from individual men and be a government of law. Well, these ancient people, they were the ones that declared war. In fact, Magna Carta came about due to the landholders' refusal to fund the king's war. You see, that's what that was all about. He couldn't get enough money to fight the battles he wanted to fight. They wouldn't give it to him. They were the landholders, were the elders. Of course, by the time the Normans came, they called it parliament. They used a French word, where you parlay, where you discuss things. But they hadn't come to the power they later got. That was in the 13th century, not until the 14th. Did English come back to the government of England? But at that time, during Magna Carta, it came down to he wanted money, couldn't get it. He went to the Islamic Sultan of Morocco, and the Sultan said, this is the King of England now, back in the 1200s. The Sultan of Morocco said, yeah, I'll give you all the money you want to fight your landholders, as long as you promise me to make all of England Islamic. But he hocked himself up. He didn't think that was good enough, so he went to the Pope of Rome, and the Pope of Rome said pretty much the same thing, but he said, I'll give you all the money you want to fight these landholders if you will promise me to transfer ownership of all the land and all the people in England to the Pope of Rome. He said, sure, I'll do that. He said, sure, the Sultan, I'll do that. And then, of course, he was hocked up to the Jewish moneylenders in England. And again, I say, all these things are said. Magna Carta says all these things. I'm not making these things up. It's just that people don't have a clue what Magna Carta says anymore. They holler a lot. They beat Magna Carta like they beat the Bible, but very few people actually knows what are in either one of those documents. Some do. I shouldn't say everybody doesn't. I've never met anybody that knows anything about Magna Carta except to say they think it's important. But it talks about those things. The framers knew this history and the destruction that came upon their ancestors when the elders lost control of the resources to wage war to the commander-in-chief's whims. In short, power gathered under a single commanding will, whether of one man or many, is downright dangerous. And remember, says Acton, where you have a concentration of power in a few hands, all too frequently men with the mentality of gangsters get control. History has proven that. Let me read that again. This is Lord Dalberg Emmerich Acton. He said, where you have a concentration of power in a few hands, all too frequently, men with the mentality of gangsters get control. History has proven that. It's not all too frequently. It's just in every case. And he says that later. Lord Acton, I'm reading my booklet, Declaration of 76, and Constitution of the United States, Common Lawyer Comments. This is a quote I put in here. He who never quotes is never quoted. So let's read what Lord Acton, what else he says, or what else is said about him. Lord Acton, though a staunch Roman Church devotee, derided the Pope's 1853 decree of unlimited power. He said, any presumption is against the holders of power, increasing as the power increases. Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Great men are almost always bad men, even when they exercise influence and not authority. Still more when you superadd the certainty of corruption by full authority. He ends with this. This is worth contemplating. There is no worse heresy than that the office sanctifies the holder of it. There is no, and he's speaking here of the Pope of Rome, and he's speaking as a Roman Catholic. But he says this, and it is applicable everywhere in government. There is no worse heresy than that the office sanctifies the holder of it. There's no worse heresy that says because a man has a badge and a gun, you can't sue him. There is no worse heresy that says because a judge has a black robe, he can't stand accountable. There is no worse heresy than the heresy that says the president of the United States can't be sued for rape, as Bill Clinton was. He was eventually and had to settle. But he argued that he's not suable. It's called often in our country sovereign immunity. There is no worse heresy, because to say sovereign immunity, to say you can't sue a fella, is saying, as Lord Acton said, the office sanctifies the man. The badge sanctifies the man. The uniform sanctifies him. his position in the church sanctifies him. Oh, don't touch God's anointed, all that. Misapplied, of course. God's anointed is Jesus Christ, friends, neighbors, and kin. Don't mess with him. But all these other mortals, no, that's a different matter. All these other people claiming to have church authority, no, are in the government. It rises to the level of religion is what it does, you see. When you say, no, there is no appeal beyond Adolf Hitler. That's right. That's giving him godhood. To say someone stands in the place of Jesus Christ is to relegate to that person a final authority from whose decision there is no meaningful appeal. That's godhood. Well, John, back to you. Thank you again for allowing me to unburden some of these points.
Okay.
Or Gerard.
Appreciate it.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Am I coming through?
Yeah. Clear.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you, Brent. All right. Well, we're going to move over to people who might have questions or comments. Anybody wants to get into the queue? There's only a couple people in the queue right now, *6, and then I think a 1 to get into the queue, *6 and a 1. But before we take the first person, I did see something in my email, Jan. Someone had asked a question concerning the status of our court case up here in New York for the gun issue. And, boy, it's been quite some time. We did file a paper back in when they threw us out under Rule 12, and we had the option or the ability to move the court for reconsideration, and we could do that either with the judge that had made the ruling, which that wouldn't be too bright idea to do, or to have a panel of judges decide. So we're waiting for this panel of judges to make a decision on this, and of course, with the next option at that, after that, is to move it into federal court under the appellate. But you know what? I don't think we're going to move it into the appellate court. You know, we can go directly to them and sue them. We'll take it into federal court. So we are in federal court, but we'll take it into another court in the federal court. We'll try to open up a court of record. So in the event that they dismiss it, we'll see if we can try to open up a court of record. I do have an idea on how we might be able to do that. I'm not familiar with anyone that really knows how to do that. But anyway, our court case is sitting in there and waiting for the judges to make a decision. I know the original judge on this thing that didn't have the power or the authority to make a decision. We didn't ask them to make a decision. Matter of fact, we told them not to make a decision because this was supposed to be a case decided by the people. It was a common law, court of record that we had opened, but they've ignored it, so it never really has opened. We were put into the statutory process where they're making decisions from the judges, judges making a decision. And it's called a summary judgment, which is not permitted in a court of record. So anyway, that's kind of where we're standing. So we're still, the case is still open. As soon as they make a decision, we'll know which way to go. I do know that I heard good word, that there's quite a few good judges down in New York now that Trump has sent down. I heard of that before. And I have gotten word that from that they are making some good decisions and abiding by the law. So he's got some decent judges down there, and we'll see where that goes if we have to go through the appellate process. But anyway, that's the status on that. All right, let's take the first caller. We've got Crystal from Connecticut. You got the mic, Crystal. Go right ahead. And anybody else wants to get into the queue, *6 and a 1. There's only a couple of people in there. Go ahead, Crystal. Crystal, you got the mic. Crystal, one more time, you got the mic. Up, oh, there you go. I heard something.
Oh, hi.
How you doing, Crystal?
Oh, hanging in there. I get those papers and things back over to you. The copy place was closed. Also, what's going on here?
Okay, so you went through the papers and you have some changes you want me to make?
Yeah, they were just like, one or two, yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, whatever you need, just scratch it out on the paper and just send that, whatever page it is that I need to redress. And I'll redress and I'll repackage the whole thing, but I'll make the change on the pages that you make notations on. But go ahead.
Okay, and also, like I told everybody here, contact our Congress, senators, and all that. And when Michael Cohen was on TV about those, all the criminal things that he was doing, he was Donald Trump's attorney for the past over 10 years. And Trump was the president for two years and 6 weeks. So all the same crime that he committed, robbing people, stealing trustees, estates, and what have you, these attorneys have been getting away with it. And everybody has been going off. Everybody needs to sit there and complain. Contact your legislators, senators, your governor's office and all, because all this illegal activity that these attorneys have been getting away with, stealing people's property, no proof of claim, and also the word they keep on, Foreign Agent Act, Federal Foreign Agent Act, where of the 1938, where they had no jurisdiction. And everybody needs to learn that. Also, they are now resurrecting all the old bills that, for example, if you filed Chapter 7 and all your bills and everything was done away with, and bills, because after 7 years, the bills are deleted because your debt's already cleared. Now they're bringing all these bills back. I got 3 bills, and I said, wait a second. And like I was talking to other people, and they said they were receiving old bills. One received a bill for 20 years ago. So what they did to her, and everybody keep out, remember when they were saying how people's, their income tax is a lot less, what's going on now? It's because the attorneys and the IRS is taking people's IRS money for old debt. Because I guess when President Trump shut the government down for the 30 days, I guess a lot of their, like he said, draining the swamp, the money is gone. So it's up there. So now they're going back after us taking any debts or what have you. Also, I don't know whether you were aware of the attorney in Georgia. This happened about 5 weeks ago. He had ripped off the trustees, homes, and people's settlements. It was over 17 plus. And what he did was he was found guilty. He was disbarred. And they let him go home to settle his affairs because he was supposed to be sentenced, I believe, the beginning of March. His bail was only $5,000 with the ankle bracelet. You know, he stole millions and his bail was only $5,000, so he only had to put up $500. Well, this attorney murdered his mother and stole her, what was it, Lexus, and now he's on the run. You know, which a lot of the clients, I guess, was really upset because they figured he might come after them. But also the identity, because he could, if he looked similar to any of his clients, what have you, he could sit there. He had all the information where he could get a passport and he could flee the country, do whatever, you know. But this is the same criminal activity. As a matter of fact, that last time I was in court, everybody was going off saying, oh, this is the criminal activities that the court was allowing, and here it made the news. So, you know, with the IRS, we found out the debt collectors, they're all attorneys. Our state has over 33,000, which we only have 169 cities and towns in our state. We've been contacting, and as I said, wow, two-thirds of our Congress were all attorneys. You know?
So did you say that you had 30,000 lawyers in the state of Connecticut?
33,000.
Wow.
And we
made mention of this in our papers. I think it was 40,000. It may have been higher than that, but I'll use the number 40 for the moment. There are 40,000 lawyers in Washington, D.C.
Oh,
and just think of that size of that, you know. Big surprise there, right?
Yes. And Washington, look how small Washington is, because it's really not even a state, because between Virginia and Maryland. And you got over 40,000. And it's just like, who's inheriting all the property? But I like the question that Trump threw at them. They want to see Nancy Pelosi's tax return. Now, she's been in office, they said, was it 20 years? So she made around $5.5 to $6 million. Her net worth, what she's up to, is $192 million. Well, how in the world do you make that kind of money? And then her brother-in-law is, I guess, some kind of project that, from the federal money, he is worth $732 million. So they were talking about there was over 380,000 people that got all this federal money, and underneath all of them, you got about a million different federal agent jobs. So when he shut down the government and said he's draining the swamp, a lot of these jobs are just, you know, because it was friends and family. And it's just like up in our area. It's all friends and family that's running the courthouses. As a matter of fact, because a lot of people were sitting there complaining pertaining to these judges and what have you, and it's just like why they were trying to take my house is because the judge said I wrote him up, you know, and he said I've seen that, you know, I wrote him up and he's in the federal courthouse. He goes, well, guess what? We're taking your house. Now, this is what they did to me. My house has been paid for, taxes, everything, all current. It was January 19th. So they said in the court, well, we can't do that because that's a federal national holiday. And I'm like, federal national holiday? What's, you know? And I didn't realize it was Martin Luther King's birthday. So it is a federal national holiday. Courts and everything are closed. The 19th to the 21st. So there was no auctions. So the following week was the 26th of January, where they could auction. But again, they had no grounds. So what happened in the court when I was there, they said, well, we can't because she'll be able to keep her house. So the judge said, well, we're going to take her house on the 19th. This is what they did. A crazy attorney went and changed the documents of my property on the 18th before it even happened. They had the police here. It wasn't served by no sheriff or nothing. When I went up there, I said, who is, where are the papers? I had not been served. Where is the sheriff? And then they have the police here. And I said, where is the sheriff? And I said I was not served. And he goes, well, you better not speak to the officer, because if you do, no, you better not speak to the attorney, because if you do, we can arrest you. And I said, where's the sheriff? Why are you here? You know, he was totally out of his jurisdiction. And again, it was a holiday. But when I went to sit there and get the paper and the, you know, and I went to the town to retrieve the documents, what have you, he changed the paperwork on the 18th. That is a federal crime.
What is the status, though, at this point? Have they set another date for you?
Somebody just
called.
Have
they threatened you anything recently?
Yeah, they, I guess they posted Friday evening that I have a short calendar on March 18th, you know.
Okay, so you need to move it into the federal court for cause.
Right. Okay, so
I mean,
that...
The paperwork that you have right now is pretty powerful, I think, and it makes your case, too. I mean, and, you know, we didn't intend on making the case, but we did make the case because, well, there were certain points that you had to make anyway. And we didn't have that much, you know, that much writing to do to make your case. It was pretty strong.
Right. All right. So, and so I got that. And then they changed my documents where they took, they deleted my records stating that I bought my house not in 2000, but in 2015. I said, this is fraudulent here. Also, they sent all my paperwork back and crossed it off. Well, anything that is submitted into the courts, you cannot change any records once it's, and it's stamped. And they crossed it off and sent it back. So what I did go to the police department. I've been filing complaints and everything against them. And the first time, police officer was like, well, under my investigation, I said, first of all, I didn't ask you to investigate. I'm making a complaint. Okay? I said, it's not for you to investigate because you really don't understand it. So how are you going to answer something? I said, please do not put your opinion in there because you're going to incriminate your own self. You know? I said, mm-hmm. I'm bringing you the facts. Here are the papers. This is fraudulent. This is what happened here, what this attorney did. Here is the facts, what the court, here is the copies, you know, and you can make the copies, you know, and this is what I'm making my complaint about. I will be back to pick up my police report.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess
right, so you're going to be going in on the 18th. That's pretty close.
Right.
So, you know, don't wait till the last minute to do what has to be done.
No, I'm going
to
get it done because I had to get it.
You also have the paperwork, I believe, we put together for the stay, right?
No, I didn't get that one.
Pretty sure we did. Didn't we do something with that? I'll have to take a look. I thought we did.
I don't...
It was a one page. Yeah, I know we did. Yes, I know I did because I had discussed it with a few people to make sure we had our T's crossed and our I's dotted. So you should have that.
Okay, I gotta check that. I never call seeing that. Not if they get that fax that over. Hopefully they'll be there tomorrow and get that done. Alrighty.
Yeah, and again, any corrections that need to be made, just mark it up with a pen and just send those pages that need correction back. That's all.
Okay.
So, okay. Well, you know, we'll talk to you next time and see where we're at. But again, you need to move on this federal court right now. Today's what, the 4th, and.
Right.
And you going in on the 18th, so that's 14 days. That's 2 weeks.
Okay,
and,
yeah, I'm going to get in
you
there
know, you
tomorrow.
Really need to be moving on this.
Okay, tomorrow I will be in there. Okay.
Yeah, okay. All right,
okay.
Let's see how things, let us know how things go with that maybe next week.
All right, yeah. We'll do.
We're going to take our next caller. And by the way, there's nobody really in the queue, so if anybody's got a question or a comment, star 6 to get into the queue. We'll take our next caller, though. It looks like, is that Constance from Connecticut? You got the mic.
Hi, this is Connie. I'm a friend of Tanya McCash's, and Tanya appeared in court on Friday, and the judge remanded her to jail. You filed NLA helped her file a habeas corpus. And the federal courts kicked it back and said she didn't exhaust all efforts. She did, when they did that, she filed an appeal.
You know, I'd like to see that paper because I don't know what that means. She didn't exhaust all her methods. What does that mean when your right of due process is being violated? That's the purpose of a habeas corpus, and that is the most important paper that anyone can file. The right to due process. They're not giving me due process. Do something about it. That is the. I'd like to write a letter to that. Write a paper to that judge about that. So if you can get me that paper, whatever decisions were made, I'll write a paper for that to that judge.
Yeah, and it's no bail. I mean, she has not been convicted of a crime, and even if you go back to the original charges, I mean, she's in family and drug court. Now, they took away her family, and that particular judge, Judge Manley in Santa Clara, he ordered that no contact with her daughter. It's been 2.5 years since she's seen her daughter. And her daughter, 3 years ago, I used to hear her daughter cry for her mom because I would be talking to Tanya and her daughter would call her and be like, I miss you, Mommy. I love you, Mommy. I want to see you, Mommy. And this is crazy. But right now she's in jail. There was an online webcast last night, and there's a campaign to call the Archbishop, the Bishop, the judge, Phyllis Hamilton, who's the federal district court judge, who remanded it back down to the lower court, saying she didn't exhaust all her efforts. And there's going to be 2 more webcasts this week, one on Wednesday and then another one on Thursday, Romola D. I don't know if anybody's on the call that knows Romola D. But we're all trying to get her out because when they put her in with people who have stabbed their mothers, brothers, boyfriends, and they also have, like, open sores and like, hepatitis and other diseases. That's the same thing happened last time. This is really rotten, you know. She doesn't know how long she's in for, and there's no bail. But it's like, what are the charges, and how long, you know? So we're trying to get this information. But
So you're not aware of any charges on her?
We're not. No, he just said. He said, you keep on filing papers with the court. Yeah, she is. He goes, and he kept on trying to get her to not talk, but she was saying she wanted certain things on record. And so he said, if you keep on talking, you're going to be remanded. She did stop talking at some point, but he asked her for a doctor's note. And she pled the fifth, and then he said remanded, and then they grabbed her and they put her in handcuffs when she said she pled the fifth, and when he asked her for a doctor's note, because he's ordering a mandatory psych eval, and she didn't get it, but she was sick during her last court date, so she didn't appear, but she did submit paperwork with the courts indicating, you know, and a doctor's note. So they're ignoring her court filings. They're ignoring that they don't have jurisdiction. In a way, he's retaliating because last June he was served and he was the defendant and she was the plaintiff. But on the third,
at the beginning of this, how long has he been on this case for her?
I would say for about a year. The Superior Court kicked it to family.
Okay, well, if she sued him and had a case against him, no matter where that case went to, he needed to have recused himself. That's something that she should have brought up earlier on, and maybe she would have been able to have that accomplished.
Right.
But,
what he did the last time was a government attorney filed a response on his behalf close to the 30th day after he was served. And then what he did was he threw her in jail. So she had so many days to respond back to them saying he is, what do you call it when they can't be prosecuted? There's a name for it. They're immune.
They're immune.
Anyways,
they love to do something like that. They talk like that. Judges do particularly, and as if they're sovereign, and then they ignore our sovereignty and the fact that we are immune to their laws. We don't have to follow or respond to their laws. Although if we don't, we'll find ourselves put in jail. But that's our battle, and that's what what we're dealing with is to be able to get us back to where we only have to answer to the real law, the law of the land, and not positive law, but natural law, you know, when you injure somebody. But go ahead. And by the way, again, there's nobody
in the queue. And on the webcast,
Go ahead.
Yeah, on the webcast that we had last night, there's several really good researchers. So they found cases going back almost 100 years or something. I don't know. They found cases where a judge doesn't have immunity when the case is not.
There's quite a few cases that the Supreme Court, with all the problems with the Supreme Court, they have made a lot of great decisions up there in the Supreme Court. You know, most of the problems, I think, are really coming from the federal district courts. And they make a lot of decisions that people just don't have the money to be able to continue to go forward and to appeal it and then go to the next process. It's very expensive to fight a case in the federal court. Very expensive. And, you know, but if you're doing all your paperwork yourself, of course, and it's only a matter of the filing fees, but even that costs money. But nevertheless, you know, but go ahead.
So we have a lot of people trying to get her out doing webcasts. There's a call campaign going on, calling senators, calling the judge, calling, you know, they focus on the bishop and the archbishop. We've gotten many people out of psych wards and hospital, like, you know, being involuntarily held. And even when Tanya, we did this on a Friday last time she was in, and on Monday in her file it says must be released. And she was supposed to be there 3 weeks, and we got her, we think that maybe something we did helped her get out earlier. She probably could have gotten out in 4 or 5 days, but when they kept on trying to take her from the jail to the courthouse, she kept on refusing because she thought they were going to, you know, do something else bad to her. So she didn't want to go to the courthouse. But they probably would have released her sooner because she got a copy of her file and it said must be released. She doesn't know who put that in her file the last time. So we're doing the same things now, but any advice or anything NLA can
do
to
help? That's interesting. What kind of court is this? Is this a state court? Out there in Connecticut?
It's a branch of Superior Court. It's Judge Manley, and he prides himself. Okay, he has a YouTube video. He prides himself, in lieu of jail time, he believes in treatment. And last time when he threw her in there, he says, you need medication. Now, show me his credentials. Show me his degrees, medical degrees, where he knows she needs medication. Oh, you know, and this is what they're doing all over the country to a lot of people, all ages. And, you know, they're even doing this to kids in school.
It's big in probate court. They do those things. I've seen it done also.
But right now our goal is trying to get Tanya out. I know NLA helped her file a habeas corpus when the judge kicked it back, federal Phyllis Hamilton, kicked it down back to the lower court. Tanya filed, somebody helped her file an appeal. And so it's in a federal appellate court. And
our justice system is such a mess. And again, you know, this takes us back to where we need to be. And the people really need to step up. They need to become educated. They need to understand this. You know, every man, woman, and child should understand the nature of natural law and how you know what legislated law is for, because until we're able to really straighten these courts up to prevent them from, you know, abusing the people the way they are, these cases, you know, you can't come out after someone on a criminal case and require anything of them without an indictment. And they do that all the time. I mean, she hasn't been indicted for anything, right? I mean, there's no indictment there.
No, 2.5 years ago, she went through a nasty divorce, And her husband got a restraining order, said he was afraid of her, but yet he kept on coming within so many feet of her, violating, like, the restraining order, calling her, sending her emails. She kept on reporting it to her divorce attorneys. Anyways, when the restraining order was, the two-year restraining order was expiring, and she asked her attorney to get rid of that restraining order because it was unjust. She never tried to kill her husband and didn't want to kill her husband, but ex-husband. But anyways, she was in the courtroom and she left, and then he tacked on her daughter, and it was for 5 years. She didn't know. She wasn't served the restraining order. So she went to the school, as she normally did, to say good morning to her daughter as she was going into school, and the principal chased her off the property. And she went to the police to complain about the principal, and they put her in ankle shackles and handcuffs and brought her to jail, and I bailed her out then.
Mm.
And she's been fighting, and it's in her superior court case. It says she was never served the restraining order. And so what these people for 2.5 years, other than alienating her from her children, they keep on, you know, she was going for drug testing every Friday ever since the last time they threw her in jail. They just will not let go. And they keep this case going.
Yeah, they become very vindictive. They become very vindictive. You know, when you start pushing back, and that's why you do have to be careful with these courts and these judges, you know, because when you start pushing back, their ego kicks in, and they become very vindictive. Like, who the heck do you think you are that you can talk to me? I'm the judge, or I'm this, or whatever. And this is true in law enforcement, too. You know, and you question them, and all of a sudden, you know, they're on top of you. And that's not true at all law enforcement, but a lot of it is true. It's just an attitude, and they need to be humbled, of course, and need to realize that they are our servants and not our masters. And the only thing that's going to solve this problem is for the people to take back the courts. That, of course, is what we are doing, and hopefully we'll get more and more people involved, and everyone will get the education they need in order to step up and be able to defend themselves and go up against these people. But until we could take back the courts, and the only way we're going to take back the courts is by taking back the administrations to administer to the grand jury and the trial jury, as far as orientating them and preparing them for a case and making sure they understand their powers and authorities and their ability to nullify. And until that happens, we're going to continue to have this problem. You know, a case like this, it sounds like you can get enough evidence off the records to go after the judge. And I know if I was in the courts and as an administrator to the juries, I would be questioning this judge about what he's doing. And if he would give me a hard time, I'd take it to the grand jury and let the grand jury question this guy to see what's going on, because it definitely is an abuse of power. And this has got to stop. Congress refuses to do their job. And these legislators, whether it's state legislators or in the federal, these judges, you know, they need to be brought to justice. And so they can impeach these judges. But they don't. They don't. They don't have no backbone. And only the people can do it, but the people have lost the power and the authority. They don't have the control of the courts to be able to do this. You know, go try to see a jury. A grand jury, for instance, and you can't get in to see a grand jury. They won't let you because they're afraid. They know the people are going to come in and complain against the judges and the prosecutors. And when they start looking into that, there's going to get a lot of indictments on that. And so that's why they insulate themselves and they set this system up so you can't get to see a grand jury and talk to them to make a complaint of any kind. And again, you know, when we went after judges here in New York, and we went down to talk to the sheriff, and it took a while to convince him, but he eventually came onto our side and realized, yeah, you're right. And he had a lieutenant or something, and who had studied law, and he looked into a lot of things, and he felt, yeah, we could go forward with this, but he said, we got to go talk to the DA first. You know, we got to get him on our side. So the sheriffs don't even understand their power either. that they don't need to go to a DA. They can just go down into the courthouse, find out the next time the grand jury's meeting, and make an appointment to see them. And nobody should question, you know, what that's about. That's none of their business. And he could bring cases in against judges or anybody else. But even the sheriffs, they don't even know. They don't even know the power and the authority that they have. And that's how pitiful we are as a people, you know. We just have become so ignorant the controls of our destiny, which again brings us back to judicial destiny and political and spiritual. We are ignorant in those areas, and therefore, to some degree, we deserve what we get. But when the people get tired of it, they'll step up and do something, hopefully. That's what we need to do now. Got to step up and do something. Starts with educating yourself, be able to defend yourself, and make your arguments and go after people. People need to know the power and the authority that they have, and especially our sheriffs, and none of them know. It's a shame. And by the way, you know, there's nobody in the queue for if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6. But you got anything else, Connie?
And even if this judge in the court thought she needed medication and she was mentally ill, putting her in jail, is that really what you do to somebody you think?
Exactly. If she's ill, you don't put a person in jail for being ill. That in itself is enough to go after that judge, in my opinion. Okay? I'm sending you to jail because you're sick. And, of course, you know, I'm sick and tired of hearing these things where these judges come up and, you know, they say, oh, we've got to get you a psych on you. Because they can't have control of you because you talk back and you deny them the authority that they're abusing and the jurisdictions that they don't have, and you deny that, so you're mentally ill. And that is a ploy I've seen over and over again in many places, and it's really, really prevalent in the probate courts. So.
And one of the things she filed 2 or 3 weeks ago was her CUSIP information. Her CUSIP is worth $28 billion, with a B, dollars.
Yeah, well, you got to be careful with that, okay? I would not go chasing those things. That's dangerous.
Well, they're making money off keeping this case going and off of Tanya. This is wrong.
Well, that's true. That's true. And, you know, again, the solution is to sue and go after these people. The problem is that's not going to work in the court system we have because they all protect each other. You're not going to get anywhere with that. They definitely won't give you a jury trial. And if you try to go in on if you take a lawyer in there, the fix is already in. Any bar attorney that goes in there, you know, they have to behave. And they're especially in cases like this, where it's so obvious, you know, everybody kind of backs away. I've seen so many cases, especially down in New York City, where people are having problems with the judges. And they have a good case, and they go see a lawyer, and the lawyer says, oh, this is a good, yeah, we can deal with it. And after the lawyer gets involved a little bit, they back out of the case, they say, and they don't want nothing to do with it. So the criminal activity and the threats and the pressure that is put on people who do try to do the right thing in the sense of lawyers, it's so corrupt, so corrupt.
And her filing the CUSIP information isn't to make money or anything. It's to expose the corruption, how they have an incentive to keep her case open and going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another friend of hers, his case just started. It's an IRS case. He found out his CUSIP information, I think his is only worth $2 million, but when he submitted that information, and again, he's not doing it to collect any money or anything, he's showing the corruption, all of a sudden the IRS wants to settle with him, you know,
mm-hmm.
because they don't want that information in the court cases. So it seems to be a powerful thing to get them to change their direction or make a different type of move.
Well, it's very rare. It's very rare to be able to do that. It's very rare. You know, they have to really feel threatened and not know, you know, the individual that they're dealing with, not understand how much they really do understand or not understand. And, of course, they try to figure that out on your responses.
Also, I'm not positive, but she might have filed the judicial benefits. So that judge, above and beyond his normal salary, is getting extra money from the county. And so it just, again, it
is
shows...
Is that in the IRS case?
Huh?
Are you talking about the IRS case on that?
No, I'm talking about Tanya's case. He probably did that, you know, that guy probably did that too. But they're trying to use this approach to show that these people can't be objective when they're ruling from the bench, because and, you know, when he's pushing prescription drugs from the bench. The people who go before him have drug convictions. Tanya does not. She doesn't have a drug or alcohol problem, and she doesn't have family anymore because they took that away from her. And she's in family drug court. This is ludicrous. But anyways, I'll try to get you any information I can. Like, we're trying to get information. She doesn't even know how long she's going to be there. And she hasn't been convicted of a crime, no bail. I mean, this is ridiculous. No bail.
Look at you. Why don't you go down and see if you can't get the records? They can't deny your records. They might, but they really can't do that. But
well,
if you
I'm
can get the records,
and she's on the west, she has a couple people helping her out on the west coast, so
well,
I can.
Well,
someone
who gets the court papers, you know, to take a look to see and try to understand what's going on. You know, again, if we did a habeas corpus already, and they've ignored that habeas corpus. You know, it's time to revisit maybe in this case because, you know, it really sounds pretty sad. So, and it doesn't sound like they have anything on them. But we need to see the papers to see.
Okay. And
here's the thing. You said something about that someone had written into the case that she needs to be released. Is that what you said?
Somebody put that in her file on Monday. She was in jail on a Friday. And
you don't know who did that?
No. She never found out who did that. It was dated Monday.
Well, you need to go to the record to find that out, because someone may have been in a situation where they responded lawfully because they saw that there was, a crime going on, because it sounds like a crime to me. And there's no reason to hold her, maybe, and whoever that individual is and why they would put it into the case, I don't know. You know, you would think they would have to be a lawyer, either someone on the prosecution side, you know, the DA or something. And she doesn't have a lawyer, right?
No, she's going pro se, and that's why she keeps on filing papers. But he yelled at her in court. He said, "You keep on filing documents to the court." Well, that's her right, you know. And anyways, I called the Department of Justice last time on a Friday. We did a webinar on Friday. And she's not a citizen of the United States. She's a citizen of Slovenia and Canada. She's been here on a green card for 20 years. She never became a citizen. So I think that makes a difference, too. And
yes and no. Look, they don't have the authority to do this to anybody, not even a citizen, okay? And again, you know, if there is no grand jury indicting her for anything, it can't be a criminal action. And if it's a civil case, they don't, you know, believe it or not, they and I know people will argue with me with this, but I'm seeing very clearly that many court rulings saying that those cases, they do not have the authority. In civil cases, administrative cases, they don't have the authority to fine or incarcerate. Now, contempt, of course, is another thing. But again, just because a judge doesn't like the paperwork, that can't be held as contempt. I mean, contempt has to be something bold and assaultive, at least verbally or something, in the courtroom itself. I don't know. You really need to find out what's going on in order to do something. You need to know who that sounds very interesting. I'd love to know who filed some kind of a thing into the case that made a statement like you just said concerning that she needs to be released.
Yeah, I'm really surprised she didn't do like try to find that out after she, you know, when she found that, got that copy of her file, and that was in there. I'm surprised she didn't
do
that.
Yeah, you need a copy. Where is, if she got it, can you get access to that?
I'll try to get access to anything that I can. Like I said, she has a couple people on the West Coast. They'll go to court with her. They'll witness what goes on in the courtroom. They'll give me a call if she's in. I've heard from her. She's been calling me as much as she can from jail, and she actually, on that webcast, she spoke twice. She's very articulate, very intelligent. You've probably
What was her name again?
Tanya McCash.
Okay, I remember McCash. Okay, yeah. All right, well, we'll see what goes on. See what you could do, and, you know, I can't get too involved, but it does sound like something simple in there. We might be able to write a paper, a short paper, and send it in on her behalf to see what happens, but maybe shake up the judge a little bit. You know, we have decided to indict. Now, when we did the habeas corpus, we sent it into the federal court for decision-making, if I believe, and she's in state court. And the federal court sent it back, that you said? And that,
she appealed their decision. And so her understanding is once she's in federal appellate court, if they reject it, they can only kick it back down one level, which means it would go back down to the federal district court. They can't kick
it
back.
Yeah, that's where she should have went, and that's where we would have filed the habeas corpus, would have been in the federal district court. And, you know, you don't go into appellate court to do that, but you go to the federal district court, and you're moving them to really enforce the Constitution, to enforce the law. That's what you're moving them for. And,
right.
And basically a habeas corpus is saying, hey, you know, bring up the proof, lay it out, or let me free.
Right, but when Phyllis Hamilton, the federal court district judge, said you didn't exhaust all your efforts.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with – that has nothing – there's nothing to be exhausted. And I know the way we wrote our paperwork was very clear from the perspective of common law and, you know, court of record and the right of due process. And that's the key, the right of due process. Any court that's not giving you due process, they need to let you go when you tell them, leave me alone. If they don't, the federal court, it is their duty to be the champion of our unalienable rights. It's their duty to say to the lower court, you don't have jurisdiction. They're denying. Leave this person alone. And unless they can prove they have jurisdiction over the person, they need to let you go. But the problem is there's so much injustice. You know, it's depressing after a while, you know. But, all right, well, let us know how things are going let's see what happens, you know.
Okay, I'll do that.
But there's a possibility she may be getting out soon anyway because of that. And this is something she recently seen, I guess you said, before the weekend.
Well, we're going to try everything, you know, this strategy of the call campaign, the bishop. One person who got out of a psych ward, and they were trying to make her a ward of the state, she got out on a Tuesday, and the archbishop changed his number because he got so many calls. So for some reason, the Catholic Church and the bishops have power over the courts. The vicar general?
The what?
There's a vicar general in the church,
yeah.
And they have a lot of power over an innocent.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do, yeah.
So the bishop in Anna's case, Anna Taylor, he got so many calls, he changed his number, and they released her the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
They did the webcast on a Saturday night, and everybody started bombarding the judge and the vicar general and you know, calling and calling and calling, and he changed his number in Connecticut. Because Middlesex Hospital is infamous for grabbing people and putting them in psych wards for no good reason and trying to force medicate them.
Yeah, again, that's a major problem. It's a plague. All right, well, let me move on to the next caller, and, you know,
thanks.
We'll see what happens maybe next week.
All right.
And again, Thank you. And again, if anybody wants to get into the queue, we only got one person in the queue at the moment, so we're going to take that caller. And if anybody has a question or a comment, star 6, and I think it's a 1 after that. But Linda, go right ahead. You have the mic.
Hi.
Linda from Virginia. Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're a little low. Can you get a little closer to the mic?
Oh, I'm right on
That's
my
good.
Phone. Hold on.
All right, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. I know what it was. It was Bluetooth.
Oh, yeah, that's really awesome. Good.
Yeah, you can hear me better now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you said you didn't have any people on the queue, so...
Yeah.
I just thought I'd take an opportunity. I was just going to continue what I said last week, and that was that, the information is saturated with, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, we're going to get rid of the Federal Reserve, we're going to change our currency, we're going to get rid of the deep state. And like I said, I'm getting frustrated with it because what I'm not hearing is, what does that do for me? What does that do for we the people? And we're so distracted with all this, and I don't think
it certainly liberates you. I mean, look at, get rid of the Federal Reserve, you get rid of the tax courts. That's a big threat and a burden on the people. Unless you enjoy paying income tax, that's what you enjoy doing. But that's a benefit of the people. To get rid of the deep state, and he is working diligently on this. And remember, he's been spending the last 2 years, and I mean the president. The president's been spending the last 2 years trying to really work things out with the economy, get a lot of barriers removed. Set the stage. He's spending money and doing things that we really don't have, but hey, we're broke anyway, and it's going to be spent anyway. He might as well spend it to do good things. He's getting the wall up there. He's got the oil flowing. We've now become, one of the large oil suppliers of the world, and he's brought manufacturing back. He put the stress on them. He stopped the tariffs in a lot of countries, so things have reduced the prices. I mean, things go on and on and on what he's done. Now, taking down the deep state, that's taken time, and you got to realize this is huge. I've come to realize by watching this battle, and anybody that's not listening in on X-22 report, which is the most in-depth report on what's really going on behind the scenes. This guy's been very consistent. He's got a lot of information that he brings up, and he's been right, all the way across the board as things are going on. So if you're listening to him, and maybe there's other people out there too, I'm just not aware of it, but this guy is one of the best in my opinion. If you understand what's going on and you're watching what's going on, this is so huge. I used to think when Ron Paul was running for president that if we can get him to be president, we'd have a chance. But no, he would have been dead. They would have been taking him out. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty well convinced they went after his family, and I know his wife was ill for a while, and he kind of backed off a little bit. So they've kind of intimidated him. It's very difficult to go up against the deep state. I don't know of anyone that can do it.
Here's the thing. There's all those changes being made.
Mm-hmm.
It, to my knowledge, it hasn't affected my life.
Not yet.
This is not. But when?
Let me make that point. Okay. Where the change is going to be, at least for us, here at National Liberty Alliance, the job that we're trying to get done is to take back the courts. Judges and prosecutors are in charge of our juries. They have total control over them. They are statutorized. They are controlled. They're stacked. They do psychologicals on them to figure out what jurors to put into what case. They figure out what judge is best for what case. None of this is supposed to be done this way. They're getting away with murder. If the people were in charge of themselves and didn't have to, you know, depend on the court in any way or being influenced in any way, that they are something that they're not, and the people were in control and looked in of, underneath everything, this corruption would not continue. It would be shut down. And that's what we have to understand. We do not have a chance, a snowball's chance in hell, to get into the courts without the deep state being brought down. I mean,
well,
this,
so far, our taxes, everybody's, I don't know about anybody else, but I'm getting 1/10 of what I got last year.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's going up. Nothing's going down.
And it's
going
to continue to go up. Of course.
And so what? The focus, my point in this is not to pick out one thing, but say the focus is all wrong. It's all wrong. I want to hear what it's doing for the people, what it's doing for the people.
I'm trying to tell you. Let me finish off my point on what it is doing for the people. I made the point that I thought that Ron Paul might be the guy, and he is the right guy, but the problem is that they take his life or his family's life. They'd get something on him. He didn't have what he needed behind the scenes. You know, this guy Trump, he's brushed shoulders with these people. He knows these people. He's a billionaire, self-made, but he's not one of them, and that's the key thing about this guy, and he does appear to be squeaky clean. Unbelievable.
Well, he can't be bought. He can't be bought. That's what's important.
That, well, of course. But this is very strategic to for us, okay, and how it's going to benefit us. When he finally takes down the deep state, and that could happen this month and next month, because from what I'm hearing, you know, the countdown is on. And if anybody that's following this, the countdown started at 18 days, and we're down to day 15, I believe, now. And that countdown is the time period when big people are going to start going to jail, if we understand that correctly. And if that is the case, when that starts, okay, that means that he has gotten himself to a position. He's positioned the nation in such a way economically and strengthening our nation in many ways. He's got the military much more powerful, so he's taken care of a lot of business. He's got a lot of business that have come back, oil flowing. He's correcting the border problems, and what he's been doing, you know, the things he's been doing goes on and on and on. The list.
But I just think that so many.
I'm trying to get to the point here. This is the big picture. All this stuff has to be done first and prepared before you take these people out, because the chaos that's going to take place and the potential even uprising in the streets is a potential, depending on how they handle this. And when they come out with all of the crimes that these people have committed and what they've been doing for 20, 30, 40 years, it's going to be hard for the people to digest this, people who are not familiar with what's going on. I remember when I first started to find out what's going on, I just couldn't believe it. I said, that's crazy. You know, you're in denial, and that denial goes on for a while. But where is the benefit for us? The benefit for us is this. When the deep state is taking out, there's going to be a vacuum, a power void. You need to understand that. Then someone has to fill the power void, and that is what we, the people, must do. We have to fill that power void. And how do we do it? We do it by taking control of the courts. And we have to position ourselves in a way and hopefully be realized and have the enough people behind us, okay, and integrity among about us to be able to do what we have to do. And what we have to do is the people have got to take control of their courts.
Well,
now,
on the courts, they are simply, the laws are there. They're just simply treating them with disregard. They're just doing whatever they want to do, and no one is holding them accountable.
You see, that's the problem with people don't understand. They don't apply to you, and they don't apply to me. They have nothing to do with me. Even though they try to apply with me, look at any federal charges that might be brought upon anyone. I'm talking about the federal level, okay? Any federal charges that anything that might be brought against you has to happen under USC 18. That's where it is. All the criminal activities, the penal codes, everything is in USC 18. And yet you...
But take, USC, but take this story, take this woman
USC
that just called.
USC 18 jurisdiction is maritime law. It's this law of the sea and not of the land. And yet they're getting away with applying that and prosecuting people underneath that. How can they do that? It's because
you can just
we're
take
ignorant.
The caller that you can just take the woman that just called. She called. The woman's in jail on no charges, and it's just and they're just getting away with it. That's the way
yep.
most of it happens. They just get away with it.
Well, yeah. Until we can finally bring them to justice, and that look at when the
it
people
doesn't
feel
even get to, you know, it doesn't even get to. It actually doesn't even get to law. They're just doing, they're running rogue, you know, they're running lawlessly
they
and rogue.
Yes. And it would be a lot worse if Hillary had gotten in there, because at this point, I think they'd be coming out after us. But
and,
you
know,
see, look,
when you ask who's going to hold them accountable, apparently no one.
So the people have to do it. The problem is the people are dumb. I speak to myself first, of course, but I'm now stepping up and educating myself and coming to an understanding and a knowledge of my liberties, okay? If more people know than don't know and understand that positive liberty is freedom from all positive law. Positive law is human-created law. You are free from all man-made law. Unless you have a contract going with something, you are participating in something commercially where you're agreeing to the terms and conditions of things. You know, go look. If you get a ticket, you go look on your ticket, and you'll find out they ask for your client number. Your client number is your license number. And your license number, they're calling you a client to begin with. They're bringing you into an administrative court. They call you a client, and yet it's all about commercial. But when you bring that up, they're deaf to that. They don't want to hear it, okay? And this is true with all of this stuff. They're using statutes against us. If the people knew that statutes were not law, then they would ignore them, and there'd be so many people ignoring them, they wouldn't be able to control it, number one. Number two, if the people take control of bringing together the administration to orientate the juries, the grand jury particularly, and of course the trial jury, but the grand jury particularly, then the grand jury is going to start refusing any indictments in these statutory processes. Then they're going to refuse participation with it. They're going to go after these judges. This judge down there needs to be indicted, in my opinion. But and if you had the records, and a grand jury can get a hold of those records, and if they had those records and looked into that and said, hey, we see a crime taking place, they indict the judge. When the people fear the government, you have tyranny. When the government fears the people, you have liberty. How do you make the government fear the people? The people have to have control. They have to control the political process. They have to control the judicial process. Without those two controls, you have nothing. Nothing. Okay? And right now, we have nothing. They have
right. The
control.
People have. There's no justice for the people. There's no justice. And therefore, the only thing we have, it really is exposure. That's the only thing we have.
We have hope. You don't see the hope. You don't see the work that's going on in Washington, D.C. You don't see what this guy is doing out there. You know, he has taken control. I mean,
no, and I'll tell you why. I don't. The reason I don't is because it takes so long to put it in place that by that time, all they've done is move their operations to another way.
For this operation to move. Look, these people are going to hang. They're going to go to jail for a long period of time, or they're going to hang, literally. You know, they maybe give them injections or them on the end of a rope, but that's what's going to happen. That's where we are heading. And I want to tell you, people are going to be shocked when they see this. When they see three presidents up on charges for conspiracy and subversion and these people are executed, because that's what's going to happen. Look, here's the facts of the matter. If you really watch what's going on and see what's going on and you hear the words that this guy, Trump, and the people around him are talking about, they have to take it to the extreme. And the extreme is applying the law, okay? That would be considered extreme in the problem that we have. But that's where it has to go to. You can't take it halfway. You know, when we wrote the gun case, We had to go all the way because why are we going to fight for half of our rights? Well, this guy's fighting the battle, and he's got to go all the way. He's already committed. His life is on the line, and he's already committed to the people, and he's going to go all the way. I can see it. But when it happens, we need to be busy educating ourselves right now. Right now, we need to be educating ourselves. We need to understand the processes of the law. We need to understand the difference between equity and law. We have to understand what true liberty is, what the definition of liberty is, which is freedom from all human-made law. Let that sink
in. I just shared a post that said, I don't give a damn about Trump's taxes. What I want to know is how are all these congressmen becoming millionaires on a salary of $217,000? That's the problem we have. They are not serving the people. They're not serving the people.
Of course, they're criminals. Look at Obama. Obama's home cost him $8 million. Where did he get $8 million? He's never worked a day in his life. Okay,
It's all wrong. The Justice Department, the congressmen.
Don't you understand that they all have to go to jail? You can't take this halfway. What Trump is doing can't be taken halfway because the other half will get to him later on. They'll take him out, okay? And they'll destroy everything he's done, and he knows that.
I want to talk about one other thing, and that is transparency. And I really think that there's a push, an effort to basically, give access to the people for every cent that the government spends. And I think we're overdue for that. You know, it can be done, and it's just not done. And we need that to happen so that we know where the money's going, what's coming in, what's going out, you know. We don't even have square one, really. We're really just speculating. We're assuming, we're guessing.
I'm not assuming and guessing. Maybe you are, but I'm not.
Where all the money's being spent. There's
what
some places.
What money? Income tax? Is that what you're talking about, that money?
No, I'm talking about all of it. Any money that the government spends.
Right, but most of it is coming from income tax, okay? And I'll tell you where it's going. It's going to incarcerate the people statutorily to begin with, and then eventually they're going to literally imprison us and kill us and get rid of us. But, of course,
I think we need access to tell us. Obviously, they're not going to tell us where the intelligence money's going, you know. But we should have access to all the money that's being spent. And, of course, I'm not going to analyze it, but people that know about this stuff will analyze it and tell us, you know, because we don't even know. We don't even know how much money's going, you know, I see little bits and pieces.
How would your life change if income tax ceased to exist tomorrow morning and you didn't have to pay it no more? Would your life change?
It's not going to happen. It's just
You see, but you don't know what's going on then. He has no choice but to do this. If you look at this man when he talks to you and you look over his left shoulder, whose picture is there? Jackson. President Jackson is on his left shoulder right there in his Oval Office, or the office that he sits in, which I guess is the Oval Office. Okay? And he has made the point that he's after the bank. What you don't realize, I guess, is that he has taken control of the Federal Reserve. Listen to what I'm saying. He has taken full control of the Federal Reserve. He has taken full control of the UN, okay? And he's taken full control of a lot of these small nations that have been, there's been all kinds of problems, like Syria, for instance, and Korea. Okay, he's taken control of the big problems, and he's dealing with problems down in South America. And why is he dealing with these problems? Because the deep state have their claws into those countries. Okay, and that's where they're being empowered at this point. The deep state's empowerment really is more so in other countries than in ours at this point, although they still have a foothold here. It's taken 2 years to clean house, and he still hasn't got it done because it's that big. It is huge. If you listen to Kennedy's speech, he makes the point that nothing goes, that they got a control and a grip and their tentacles on everything. Think about this. This whole thing is all about bar attorneys. It always has been. They are the minions of the New World Order. They are like roaches. They are everywhere. And they have total control on every single political office and political animal in the entire nation and around the world. Okay? That's the kind of control they have. They have the control. They had total control of the controls of the FBI, the CIA, Homeland Security. This is what you're up against. And this is what he's up against. And it takes time. And we have to have patience, number one. But I'm going to tell you that the Federal Reserve is going down. I doubt they're going to make it through this year. Because I think that there's going to be the moves this year on taking down the Federal Reserve, and he's going to do that very simply.
But okay, all I'm saying is I have my doubts as to whether that will filter down to we the people.
Okay, well, look at faith. When you go in your spiritual life, the Bible tells us faith comes from hearing, and hearing from the Word of God. Okay, in order for you to have faith in these things, you have to be hearing good news and consistent news, news that is factual and proves itself to be true over time, consistently, over and over and over again, and then you see the big picture. So obviously that's what you're lacking. If you're lacking the faith that this is happening, you're lacking the knowledge. If you want the knowledge, I already told you, one of the best sources of information is the X-22 report. Go listen to that
I listened to the X-22 report, but I'm even frustrated with that because it's always, okay, it's coming. It's going to happen any day now, you know. And this goes on for, I mean, it's gone on for years.
You're doing the same thing here at National Liberty Alliance. You got to keep people's attention. You got to keep them a hold on them. You got to keep them interested. You got to keep them focused because people fall asleep and go away, you know. Over the years, we've lost a lot of people. We've had some, we've lost people because they just things went on, and we've even had people say, we're not having any wins or anything. They don't understand the battle. You know, we don't care about losing the battles as long as we win the war. If there are 100 battles and there's one battle that's going to win the war, we can lose the 100. We just got to win that one that's going to win the war, and that is the key to this whole thing. Positioning is everything. For instance, what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance, we started this movement in the courts, in the federal courts. We started this in 2013, okay? And what's that, That's 6 years, okay? We've been at this for 6 years, okay?
You know what? I hate to say this, but I'm going to have to call back.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'll just finish my point. We've been at this for 6 years, and what we had to do in 6 years is we had to get enough people involved, okay? We had to also create an education and put together a plan and execute the plan point by point by point with the picture of going after the judiciary, the picture of really filing that big case, okay? Which
well,
the timing
I'm
is right
all
for
I'm all in with all of that. I get it. I get the problem.
Well, believe me, it's the same thing on what he's doing. Our success, and I hate to say this, that our success depends on any individual, but our success depends on what he does in Washington with the deep state. But ultimately, it depends on God, because God raises up the powers and he brings down the powers. You know, he's a type of Osiris. There's no doubt about it. If anybody who knows about Cyrus, King Cyrus and Babylon and what took place, this guy is a type of Cyrus, no doubt about it. And it's like a miracle, in my opinion. I've been in this battle since the year 2000. 1999 is when I started to run into my problems with the government, and I got involved with We the People in 2000 with Robert Schultz. And I've been involved ever since. And every time I look and learn more and more and more, the sicker I get to see what's been going on and what's really going on behind the scenes.
Right.
But the battle takes time. And I am, with all that I've known and all that I see, this is like a miracle. This guy came out of left field. against all odds, he won the presidency. I mean, he never should have won it, but he did. He took 30 states. He took a lot of states he never intended on getting. 30 states he took. So here he is, and he's in the game, and all of a sudden, you know, they've tried to take him out 12 times. Matter of fact, Q just recently made the point, I think on nine or more of those points, that they've tried to assassinate him. But they've tried to assassinate this guy 12 times. Do you know that he's lost three helicopters, his own Trump helicopters? He lost three helicopters. They went down. And on two of them, he was supposed to be in them. You know, all kinds of things going on out there.
Yeah, he's definitely paying a personal price. You know, you can see that.
Oh, yeah, but he's doing it for himself and his family as much as he's doing it for everyone else. He's doing it for the love of America, the same reason we're all doing it for, and also doing it because it's the right thing, and you find yourself in the position with the ability to do something, and you don't have a choice because you can't not do the right thing, you know? If a person has the power and the ability to do something that maybe someone else can't do, and they have the understanding, the knowledge, and the ability, and the strength to be able to do it, they have to do it. They have a duty to do it. And that's where we're at. We have a duty to save our country if we have knowledge. You know, anybody who's understanding what we're doing, you have a duty to stick with this and get it done, no matter how long it takes. What purpose is life if we lose this war? You know?
All right. Nothing. Well, I'm gonna have to call back. Unless
Linda. All right. Bye. Bye. Hey Jeff, how you doing? You got the mic.
Good, John. How are you? You know, I have so many things I want to say in response to this last caller.
Go right ahead.
One thing that's just I'm hopeful that anyone that's listening and I hope she hears this, that, you know, yes, it's frustrating that this is a long battle, or these battles are going to take a long time. You mentioned Ron Paul. Ron Paul is a hero in his country in many respects, but one thing that he did is he woke a lot of people up, and that's what it's going to take. We need to be waking people up every day. And yes, I would love in my lifetime to see these changes, to see us realize America as we created it, with our natural laws as they were intended. I want to see that, but you know, the last thing that I want to hear anyone say.
Say 14.
What's that?
Read Isaiah 14.
Okay.
I'll tell you right now. I was very hesitant to speak and mention that particular chapter in public.
Okay.
And I had talked with Gerard and other people a couple of years ago on this, and now I look to see where we're at and what's going on, and I look back at Isaiah 14, and I say, wow, the whole world is going to rejoice soon when they take these people down. God
right.
says that they are not going to fill the earth with their dark cities. It's not going to happen.
Right.
That's something that's carried me through this process.
Right. And me too. I mean, you know, I believe that wholeheartedly, and that's what needs to be. You know, one of the things I have like a list of things you're going to cut me off, and I understand that. I appreciate that. But one of the things I just wanted to say in response to this woman.
We've got one other caller in the queue.
Well, you know me. I like to be concise, and I like to be short and sweet as much as I can. But, you know,
Do you mind if I unmute Fred also and it'll be a three-way conversation?
No, that'd be awesome. Absolutely,
yeah,
that'd be awesome. Of course.
Fred, so the three of us can speak. But go ahead, Jeff, continue.
So, some words that John F. Kennedy said can't be, you know, overstated. We can't hear it enough. Ask not what you can do. Ask not what the country can do for you. Ask what you can do for, you know, the United States of America. That's the mentality that if a lot more of us had that, you know, that thought process, that mentality, that opinion, that point of view, this country, you know, we would be in a much better state today. In my opinion, the United States of America has never, ever, ever followed the rules, or the people that serve us have never, ever followed the rules that we dictated, that we directed from day one. It's never happened. And I agree with everything you're saying. I believe, I'm convinced that Trump is the answer. Trump, you know, he talks, he says the words that we need to hear, the words that need to be said, and if, you know, and he's acting on them, and that's what we need. And you know, is he perfect? Hell no, you know. But, you know, what he stands for, though, in terms of his country is so important. And so for me, I can look past his imperfection. I mean, I don't remember when we had a perfect president. John F. K., a lot of people thought was a perfect president, but he wasn't perfect. He did a lot of bad things as a human being.
We've been told, anyway.
Well, that's true. You know what? Good
you
point.
You see, one of the things, here's a problem I do have. And they did this with Jefferson. Any good man they did
very
it
good
with.
Point,
I mean,
man.
It did.
Good point.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened. I went back, and some years ago I found a site, and I wish I can find it again. I'll do some searching. I really need to find this site. But it was a JFK site. I mean, they had all kinds of speeches and discussions and debates. And I listened to this man talk, and I believe, first of all, sometimes when people talk, especially when they talk with certain convictions and righteousness and so on, you know, that has to be part of them and who they are.
Right.
And anybody who talks like that and on that level, even if they have certain problems, they have restraint about them. Anybody who really strives to be righteous, especially a person who tries to have a relationship with God, and that's striving to be righteous. Okay.
Absolutely.
You restrain your actions, okay? Because we're all sinners, you know, we're all stuck in the same world, stuck in the same flesh and have the same problems, you know, so we have to, you know, hold ourselves back. And people who can't control themselves, they're the ones that go out and get in trouble. But let me read something, kind of stepping back a step or two here. And I know you're familiar with this, and most people with National Liberty Alliance should be familiar with this, but I want to look at a few particular points in this paragraph. And it's in the Supreme Court case of United States versus Williams, where Justice Anton Scalia, who's writing for the majority, and this is what he said. He confirmed
the fourth,
this.
The fourth.
Well, it's not just the fourth branch of government. There are two points in this that he brings up that we need to really latch on to. And this is what gives me drive, and this is what should give everyone drive, the knowledge of this. If we can spread the knowledge of these two points that I'm going to bring up out of this paragraph to other people, maybe they decide to get educated. Maybe they decide to get on to into the battle here. So let me read this, okay?
Yeah.
And I'll really emphasize on the area I'm pointing to. The American grand jury is neither part of the judicial, executive, nor the legislative branches of government, but instead belongs to the people. It is, in effect, a fourth branch of government, governed and administered to directly by and on behalf of the American people, and its authority emanates from the Bill of Rights. Thus, the people, and this is one of the main points right here, the people have the unbridled right to impanel their own grand juries and present true bills of indictments to a court, which is then required to commence a criminal proceeding. Our founding fathers presciently, I'm not sure how to pronounce that word, looks like presciently, but presciently, thereby created a buffer that the people may rely upon for justice. Now here's the second point. When public officials, including judges, criminally violate the law. Now, there's a lot in here, but those two points particularly, okay,
huge.
That's what we have to grab onto. We have the power and the authority to go after public officials. When they violate justice, when they criminally violate the law, we have the power, we have the authority, we have the duty to go after these public officials, including judges, like that judge that woman was talking about, Connie was talking about, okay? We also have the power to impanel, to call. After all, the Magna Carta, the 25, the first known recorded grand jury in history, okay? You see it in the Magna Carta. That's the principle by which it's built upon. And they didn't go get permission from mommy and daddy to come up and do. They didn't go see the king and say, "King, you know, we want to do this. We want to take your head off. Is it okay with you?" You know, they didn't go to court. Didn't go any. They picked up, they went up, and they took control of their business and did what has to be done. And when the people can think like that, that's when we're going to win. And that's what the people have to get into their minds and their hearts and their soul. But go ahead.
Big time. Well, yeah, I think I really believe that covers, you know, so much of what I really wanted to, you know, kind of address. One of the things she said is that what has it done for me, and you know, the reality you know that I've seen myself as a volunteer. I've been a volunteer in two counties in Albany in upstate New York, Albany and Schenectady counties, rubbing elbows with DAs and sheriffs, and I've seen the crime levels that are increasing. It used to be. And certainly, I want to make it clear. This is wrong. There's no question. But it used to be that if you're a minority or if you were poor, you know, you didn't have the same rights. You were treated differently. But what I've seen is that it's getting more across the board. You know that, you know, it's more now anyone, you know, whether they're poor or maybe middle class. And it's still true that if you're wealthy, you've got different rights. I've heard judges say, well, they're a doctor, so they have different rights. And, you know, obviously we know if they're a lawyer, they have different rights. And this is a growing theme that's real. It's real life. I've heard people that I admire, I don't agree with this, and it's a stupid thing to say, but they believe that the Constitution gets in their way because in their cases, they may be astute enough, they may be knowledgeable enough and helpful enough, you know, to know what to do and ignore the Constitution,
you know,
to protect people.
I'd just like to make a point about that. Of course it gets in their way. Why does it get in their way? It gets in the way because they're breaking the law. They're applying statutes upon we the people. Why are they applying statutes on we the people? They're applying statutes on we the people to keep control over us so that it can continue to just destroy us economically and moral-wise. They have demoralized this nation. They have bankrupt this nation, okay?
Well, what I'm saying, though, it's a growing mentality, and there are even people that may possibly know. Like, for example, I was a volunteer for probably 10 years in Schenectady County for domestic violence, and I know people that are very, very astute, I'm not a good judge of character. I could never be in a role like that. These people, I think, are good at it, and they believe that, you know, that they should be able to make the decision and forget about rights and stuff like that. And maybe they're correct, but my point, though, is that it doesn't matter because, you know, we can't allow one or two people along the way that may be correct. We have to have one rule, and that is we have to follow people's natural rights, period, across the board. And so, but the growing mentality.
And it's really, really simple. Just open up the courts of justice. That's all they have to do, and leave us alone, because we don't even need you, Mr. Judges, to sit in there. We'll get a coroner to sit in there. We'll get a sheriff to sit in there. We'll find somebody to sit in there to be a traffic cop, okay?
Right.
Because
apparently
these people, they're so destructive, they're so lawless, they're so demoralized, okay?
These
people have destroyed this nation. Okay, and you know we're guilty of two things. Okay, we're guilty of permitting slavery, not us directly, but going back to our founding fathers. That's the first curse.
Shame
in
on us. Yeah, shame on
That's
us.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the next biggest curse in America took place, I think it was in 1973. Okay, and that's the issue of abortion. We need to change that and overturn that. Until then, until we overturn Roe versus Wade, until we bring it back into the natural law courts and let the people deal with it through their hearts and courts of justice, understanding they need to do the just thing, okay? Until we can do that, this nation will continue to be cursed. Now, people could disagree with that, but I'll tell you what, I am absolutely convinced those are the two sins of this nation that has brought us under the tyranny that we have been living under all of our lives.
Well, you know what, this is not meant to be argumentative, but there is another issue in there, and there, it's certainly not at the same level of what you're talking about, and I'm not suggesting it is. It's not. However, you know, what occurred, one of the things that occurred here, though, is that because of, you know, however the slavery thing started, when we realized that, you know, African Americans are people, they're human beings, and they share the same damn rights every other human being has in this country, certainly. When we started realizing that, one of the things that occurred is that's when the illegal gun right issues began. And it began because these elitist pieces of garbage Americans were afraid for their lives. So they started, you know, the idea that we have to have, limit gun rights. And I believe that where we are today in some of the states like New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, certainly, I believe that they kind of just took that and ran with it, you know, and let's start, as Cuomo would say, you know, let's form a progressive, you know, a progressive communist or anti-American, you know, however you want to rephrase it, you know, mentality here in our state. And that's where it began, because, you know, yes, they were afraid of blacks coming after them, and so that's just another one of the imperfections in our history.
Well, you know what's interesting? You know, we were sold on slavery from England, okay?
Yes.
And the elites already controlled England, okay?
Right.
The bankers already had control of England. They were seizing control of America. But they had to keep America down, all right? Now, they didn't have slavery. It was unlawful for them to have slaves in England back then.
Isn't that crazy?
But
yeah.
We did, okay?
Yep.
And they made sure we did, okay?
Yep.
And again, the first sin of this nation is when our founding fathers permitted slavery to continue after the Declaration of Independence and after this Constitution, that for the purpose of trying to keep a couple of states in the Union, they should have let it go. They would have come along probably anyway. Look, God would have blessed us even more, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
Because we'd be doing His will, we'd be doing the right thing. But that's the problem we're at. By the way, Fred, you're unmuted if you want to talk and pipe in here.
I know that, John. I've been quiet and listening. I've been lurking.
I know. I've been.
Hey,
I've
stop
been
lurking.
Attack here.
I agree with you people on some points, but disagree on others.
Oh, no. I want to hear what you disagree on.
Those are the ones we want to discuss.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
those are the most important ones. Yeah.
The issue of slavery has been a worldwide problem since
absolutely.
The Tower of Babel. I mean, get over it. Reparations isn't going to solve anything.
Let me make a point here.
Wait a minute. I want to finish my point.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, Laddam.
Now, when you read the Bible, the fourth commandment, I think, is one of the most important ones. That is honoring the Sabbath. The Sabbath is from Friday at sundown till Saturday at sundown. There is no other Sabbath. And if you expect God to hear from heaven and heal your land, you better get on board with His commandments.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the remnant church, that is the church that honors and upholds His commandments and has a testimony of Jesus. It's in Revelations. Read it.
You know, we can't disagree with what you're saying. We have to get over it. But it's still an issue. And my only point was that, you know, there was a time in our history where someone, used that as an excuse to violate people's Second Amendment rights. And that was my only point. I mean, I believe it. I think the history is there to show it. And I think that it's part of what we have to deal with.
Well, just going back, I disagree with you, Fred, and maybe we'll get into a deeper discussion one day, but I'll just bring up a couple of verses that you might want to look at during the resurrection, when you look,
the 11th commandment says, love one another as I have loved you, in that you fulfill the commandments. That's what you're going to say. I know that.
Oh, no. That's not what I was going to say. What I was going to say is that when the Bible reports in all four Gospels, by the way, on the first of the Sabbath, or as it began to dawn towards at the end of the Sabbath, as it began to dawn upon the first of the Sabbath, okay, there was a Sabbath change, Saturday to Sunday. Now, people don't have to believe that to have a relationship with Christ. You can worship God on Tuesday if you want. Ultimately, the true Christians worship God in their entire life. They walk with God. And of course, from time to time, we stray out and then we realize what we're doing wrong, and we're back and we're repenting and we continue to walk with God. I mean, that's a true Christian. Now, you know, the Bible tells us also concerning blessings upon Israel. And Israel is my son. Of course, that's Christ, but we are Israel. We're the body of Israel. We're the body of Christ. So we're the body of Israel. We are Israel. So that's the children of God that are blessed. And Jacob is the fleshly one. Jacob's name was changed to Israel. But Jacob, who was the fleshly one, he's struggling with his salvation, struggling with his relationship with God. But God blesses Jacob as much as he blesses Israel. And he goes on to say that he blesses even those who cleave to Jacob, cleave to the fleshly part of the body of Christ. Okay, not necessarily that that's part of the body of Christ, but part of Christianity, part of Christendom. So anyway, I would argue the point with you, because that becomes a doctrine. But I agree, and we are commanded to honor God, and we're commanded to keep the Sabbath holy. But that's only going to be upheld by Christians. That would be God's statutes, really. Okay, you know, as a Christian, we obey the statutes and the law, and as non-Christians, people obey the law. They may not obey the statutes, but the statutes doesn't injure us. It injures themselves by not obeying it, because they're there for their safety, and it also injures them because they lose their relationship with God. But when we bring that into law, into where we're at, into the world, the only thing that could be applied onto the general public, onto the people, is the law of God, not the statutes per se, in the sense that the Christians keep. And again, honor your mother and your father. Right there is a principle that keeps you moral. It protects you and it protects your parents, and it also strengthens a relationship with God. There's a benefit from being obedient to that statute. Okay, you can't put a man in jail or punish them because they're not obedient to their parents. God doesn't give them the authority to do that. So we have to look into the law that's written into the hearts, and it's written into the hearts of all men. They all know. What was that guy? There was a serial killer. There was a couple of them. Jeff Dahmer is one. There was another one. They confessed the fact that they knew what they were doing was wrong. They understood right from wrong. They didn't have empathy, but that didn't give them the right or the authority to go out to kill anyone. They were murderers, okay? Right. And they knew it. They knew they were wrong. They confessed in their conversations that they were wrong.
Yep.
But anyway, to get away from that, let's get back to the subject at hand.
I have an idea for your court case.
Yeah.
File a writ to impanel a jury. You don't want to speak to any judge or any commissioner or anybody but the jury. Get the jury.
I'm sorry. Say that again. I missed the first part of that. What was that?
File a writ to impanel the jury in your presence in the courtroom. You only want to speak to the jury, and the foreman of the jury will serve as a justice.
Well, you know what? What you're saying is part of the strategy of how we're filing our next case, which I don't want to get into at the moment. Because
man,
sometimes
I'm pulling your straws trying to figure something out for you, and here you're working on it.
Working on it already. We've got that thinking is exactly
that doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, sorry, John.
Well, look at you. You've come up to the right conclusion. That means that's reinforcing my conclusion too.
Well,
you know?
anything outside of the jury you do not need, because
that's
you're dealing
right
with a
that's
bunch
right
of lawyers, and you do not want to deal with lawyers.
look at, no, it's not that you don't want to deal with lawyers. You don't want to deal with bar attorneys.
That's
and I'm talking about those people who serve the bar and the capital B-A-R, not the bar, which is a level a level that we should be living at. Can't think of the word for that. But in any event, we need to really bring back, and we wrote a paper on this, and we're going to be bringing this into the court case itself, okay? We need to bring back the original 13th Amendment. It was passed, it was ratified, it was there, and it was done by our founding fathers very early on. I believe it was done while Jefferson was president, still president, is when that particular 13th Amendment came up. It may have been ratified after he left presidency, but I know the debate and the argument was already on it at that time. And the interesting thing is, of course, we've written part of that into the Constitution already, okay, but not enough of it. The part that's the honor is the one that was left out that we put into the 13th Amendment, that anyone who has any kind of a let me read that directly. Hang on a second.
There's a lady, Brill Anon. She has the 13th Amendment down pat.
Well, anybody who comes with a title of nobility or honor. You see, the honor part was left out of the Constitution. And they came back to get that in, and they did with the 13th Amendment. But they went all the way. They were so upset by these bar attorneys. These are barristers. They came to Britain at that time. They were English. The American Bar Association wasn't here yet, okay? But they were infesting already our law, okay? And of course, remember, the king had all his peoples here. He had his minions over here. They were operating in the courts. And they were frustrated with the fact that the people refused to indict. And that's why they would, bag them up and throw them on a ship and take them over to England to try them, because they got frustrated with it, because the people wouldn't indict on behalf of the king's, law. But going back into this, okay, the bar attorneys, that's the problem. And in the 13th Amendment, it doesn't say that if they're in office, and that they would lose their citizenship and not be able to hold any office of trust. It says anybody, okay, any people, anybody, anywhere in the United States, if you are a citizen and you take on that title of honor, which is of course Esquire, which is between the gentleman and the knight, okay, you take on that title of honor, you no longer are a citizen of the United States, and you lose any ability to hold any office of honor. And that's
Wait a minute. What about an officer and a gentleman by an act of Congress? What does that do to the poor guy? Now he's not a citizen?
Well, I don't know about those things, but, in any event, that's not a violation.
You've got to figure it out, because you don't make rash statements that are general and sweeping. You got to be defined. Well, it's like... Why do you think there are so many?
Can't know everything. We can't know everything.
Well, listen, man. Why do you think there are so many legal dictionaries? It's because new words pop up. Now they're in the process of erasing words. They're starting to limit.
That's a fact. That's a fact.
And I've got a challenge for you. Here's what you tell them. You tell them that if you can't find it in a legal dictionary, you won't use it.
Yeah, well, you have to get it from the legal dictionary. You got to go back to the originals. You got to go back to blacks, for instance. Blacks is pretty accurate and pretty good. I have found very little fault in there. It's really good. The problem with blacks and people, when people read and they look into blacks, they're not looking at jurisdiction when they're reading in there. They have to understand that some of those things that are taking place that black is just recording as a dictionary, okay? He's covering, matter of fact, I believe it's 51 different jurisdictions, maybe 52. It's somewhere around there. I did a study on that to go through blacks to pull out all the jurisdictions, and it was something like 52 jurisdictions.
Wow.
And so each one of these things that are taking place, you got to figure out what jurisdiction is being talked about, you know?
Wow. So is there a book on just jurisdictions and how to use them?
Well, you only need one jurisdiction. We don't need any other. Any other jurisdiction doesn't apply to us. We only need the jurisdiction of natural law. Anything
That's
else
not
is
what I said, John. Listen to what I said.
Yeah.
A book on jurisdictions. So you can open that damn book up and get an idea what court you're in and where you are in the process and switch it back to common law.
I will tell you, look, when you go into a federal court, if there's any statutes coming in, you know there's a problem. As long as the statutes stay out and the judge stays out and the jury is listening and that's the decision makers, you're in a good shape. Okay? As long as that jury has been well advised to their power and authority and their duty. If that jury is well advised to those things, you can guarantee you're going to get justice in that court. You better not be guilty then either, because you're going to get justice. In any event, what else we got? We only got a couple of minutes, and I got one other person in the queue.
There's only one other really important thing that I don't think we can say enough. And I have met so many people that have no idea. You know, we talk about the Federal Reserve Board. So many people have no idea. And it's fact. I don't care. You know, if you don't agree with it, do extensive research. It's fact that the Federal Reserve Board is not part of our government. It's never been audited. We have no idea how many billions or zillions of dollars these pieces of garbage have taken from us. So many people don't understand that. And mm-hmm. and so, you know, when we talk about the deep state, to me, you know, that is the most relevant part, you know, of that that subject matter, that, you know, these are people that are that have just taken advantage of us. They've cheated us, and you know, we need to eliminate that. And
we can be thankful to Griffin and Ron Paul for really bringing that to the surface and maintaining it and keeping it here all these years.
Yes.
You know, up in our conscience.
Absolutely.
You know, I became aware of this very early on when I moved into this debate against the state, so to speak. 2000 is when I really got active, and that's when I learned from Griffin and eventually Ron Paul. I didn't know Ron Paul way back then. I had seen him in that one video. What was that video that was done about the Federal Reserve and they killed him?
That's where I got a lot of this knowledge. That's where I
was the video? Do you remember the name
of
the video?
I can't think of a name. I actually have a CD.
Ron Paul was that one. I didn't know him, who he was at the time. I knew he was senator, and I didn't even know his name. But then when he ran for president, I remembered his face, and he was in that video.
That's actually.
But he has kept Congress. You know, he's been a thorn in the side of Congress.
Absolutely, big time. And now his son is Rand is as well.
Yeah.
Thank God.
And he's got it on the record. So,
absolutely.
Those two guys particularly have been really the guys that have really brought that to surface and kept it there, and we've grabbed onto it. So,
absolutely. Yeah,
all right.
They made history.
Let me move on. Fred, you got anything else? I want to move on to Daniel here.
Well, my last comment would be this. In our nasty state of California and sanctuary laws, the police refuse to stop illegal aliens. What kind of paperwork can I file to get equal protection under the law? I yield.
That's right. That's right. We shouldn't be arrested or tried either.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of different points there. I mean, yeah, right. They're arresting us and they're not arresting them. I mean, that makes no sense. What are we talking about here? It's crazy.
Amazing.
Crazy.
Well, they're free from all human law. Come on, they're getting the recognition of our unalienable rights.
Exactly. That good analogy, perfect analogy, 100% straight on. Yeah, I mean which is just freaking disgusting. I mean, it just Are you kidding me?
All right, let me move on to Daniel
because
it's 12 o'clock and we want to close down, but we want to give him a chance. So
okay, go ahead, Chance. Thanks for your input.
I'm going to click a button. Thank you. If you get kicked out of the queue, Dan, you'll just come right back in. But let me push the button here to see if I can get to you. Okay, let's try it. You should have the mic now. Go ahead, Daniel.
Okay, Daniel, interesting conversation. About the 13th Amendment title of nobility, doesn't Article 1, Section 10 basically talk about, you know, there should be no titles of nobility? And so
But the problem with that, you know, they had it with the titles of nobility, but they didn't have titles of honor in there. You see, Esquire is a title of honor, not a title of nobility. And that's what the 13th Amendment did, is it amended that in the sense of it added the word, because if you read it, it's pretty much word for word for what we already have.
I understand what you're saying, but I think it'd be better worded titles of privilege, because, I mean, you just got to talking about, you know, the commandments, you know, honor your father and mother. Honor means just to be honest and fair with people, and so I'm not against the word honor.
Satan twists every word that we have and turns it around.
Yeah, correct. And I would just say don't give him that word, you know, if we was to, I mean, I don't know, I think the problem is
when you talk about it, if you don't use that word, you lose the context of it. You lose the ability of using it. Yeah, here's a, for instance, I have a difficult time because I've been wanting to not even bring up common law no more. But common law is everywhere, okay? And it means natural law. I try to use the word natural law as much as I can instead of common law, because these people, they just brush it away. Yeah, we believe in common law, and they move it on. You know, their common law to them is the decisions of the federal district courts and the appellate courts too. But mostly they like to use a lot of the lower district courts, the federal district court decisions.
They're perverting the meaning of the word law. But also, a difference between natural law and common law is that the common law is specific natural laws put into writing so that it's commonly understood by all the people. Does that make sense?
Common law and natural law is synonymous, okay?
I know that.
Common law is the law common to all men.
Correct, yes. The law of the universe is common law. But I'm just differentiating between the natural law and the common law in the sense that the common law is written down as applying to specific natural rights that everyone can clearly understand. And so it's the natural common law, you might say.
Right. Well, you know, again, the word common law to these people is a collection of decisions made by a federal district court or even state courts on the equity.
Yeah, I know they say that, but for something to be law, it can't be changing, it can't contradict, and so when they start giving a definition like, okay, common law is whatever the judge says it is, or justice, they define justice as, oh, whatever the judge says it is, that's what it is. That's not a definition. That's not law. That's just fraud and deception. I mean, you can't have a law that says, okay, the words mean whatever the judge wants to pretend they mean at the moment. That's not law. That's just pure contradiction and corruption.
Well, that's a good point. But going back to the word, okay, titles of honor, not titles of honor God is dealing with it, that we're being honorable individuals. That's
what
they're
saying is they're talking about.
They're talking about government.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Titles.
But I'm saying, do they? Okay. Today they call the judges your honor kind of thing. I don't know. That's. I guess they're still using that corruption, but.
They love to get the confusion in there. But here's the point: you're not going to be able to trace back the meaning of the word honor, title of honor, without using the word, because the title of honor, there are three titles of honor that these elitists put out, okay? These are the honor of their soldiers, their minions, okay? It is the gentleman. You're a gentleman because you're doing our deeds and you're one of us. You're a gentleman, okay?
Okay.
Or you're an esquire. You have the power and the authority in the courts, okay? And you're doing our deed. You're our minion. Or you're a knight. You're out there fighting the battle for us, okay? So those are the three points. All three of those is a title of honor. And that, again, is the word that our founding fathers left out of the Constitution. And so they amended it. they amended it quite quickly. Remember, Jefferson was president. I mean, it was 20 years earlier that we became a nation, and here's Jefferson in there. And at that point in time, they're debating the problem, and they pass the 13th Amendment. You know?
Okay.
So,
but I would say today, though, you could use a word that covers all of it, and you could call it titles of privilege.
But you can't trace it back to the meaning of Esquire. But maybe you can. You can make a blanket statement.
But that's a position of privilege, though, because, see, privilege is not based on rule of law or common law. It's just rules of, you might say, bribery. Whereas, and so a title of a privilege could apply to all of that, I think, very well.
Yeah, but to make your argument, you got to bridge it back. You got to get a bridge back to what they're really talking about. And if you want to,
as long as you define in your Constitution or Bill of Rights or whatever, common law, the definitions of those words, and as long as they're effective communication without contradiction or vagueness, as long as you have those defined, you know, like with any constitution, there should be an added list that defines all the important words in there that are a part of that constitution. As long as those are clearly defined and efficiently used wording, then that's effective in your common law contract.
Mm-hmm.
Constitution.
Well, it's going to be a hard thing for the system to digest the truth and justice, you know, because let's look at what has to happen. If we're going to be real here and we're going to bring the law back, we have to bring the whole law. We can't bring a piece of the law. We'll be cursed for that, okay? So we've got to bring the whole law. And the whole law brings us right, just dealing with the problems in the courts, the problems in our legislators, and really throughout all of government, okay? It all gets back to the minions that are controlling this and manipulating this and chewing on the words there and making them mean whatever they want it to mean and making the law and creating this statutory prison, okay? It brings us right back to them. So if we're going to apply the true law, we need to resurrect the 13th Amendment and put it back in its place where it belongs and execute it. That means every single bar attorney either has to leave they have to give up their allegiance to that, give up their bar license or whatever you want to call it, okay, or leave office, okay? Actually, on the one hand, they're no longer citizens and they need to just be kicked out of office. But on the other hand, you know, a lot of them were just as ignorant as we, and we have to take that into consideration, and we have to start somewhere. So we say, okay, you give up your bar license, you give up your bar practice, or you leave. Now, we need lawyers, okay? We absolutely need lawyers, okay? You need people who are studying the titles. Just take the federal level, okay, on its own, okay? You got 54 titles there. Each one of those titles is an expertise. People need to have certain expertises in certain parts of these things to be able to, you know, help. And that's where people do need people to represent them, at least most people. You see, for me, well, I was into construction, okay? And when I started to realize certain things about the law and how things work in construction law, I started to exercise the AIA standard contracts. And I read the AIA standard contracts backwards and forwards, upside down, backwards, in mirror. I knew everything about that. Okay, because I was able to defend myself as a construction manager and defend positions as far as the law that governed that contract before an arbitrator, which would be the engineer or the architect who would arbitrate on site any kind of a situation, a dispute, or an extra cost that's being disputed or whatever the case may be. So you have to know the law. So if I was involved in something commercially, but I'd be reading that law because I want to represent myself. I want to go in there and make the battle my own because no one could defend you better than you, okay? But
if you're knowledgeable, yes.
Yeah, nevertheless, there are people who don't have the time or they don't have the the desire or whatever it is. The tears. So then they can go out and hire a lawyer, but God, not a bar lawyer, okay? And all lawyers to a degree are lawyers in a sense that they've taken the bar exam. But go ahead. That doesn't really make them a bar lawyer, but in a sense it does. But that should be just eliminated. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're learning corrupt rules and in false allegiance.
Right.
But
I think. But let me just make this point before you bring the next point up. There should be a test, like the bar test.
Yes.
There should be tests, but it shouldn't be run and operated by the lawyers themselves to begin with, okay, the bar, shall I say. But, yeah,
right,
if you at the bar, people are competent in a particular area, and you can get your stamp, your certificate, your license, whatever you want to call it, the thing you put up on the wall, okay?
Well,
yeah,
not a license, because that's a title of nobility.
What's that?
That license is a title of nobility.
Well, that's true.
A privilege.
In that area,
yeah.
Well, I don't know whether
you
call
it a certificate. A certificate of registration, you know, certified.
Yep. But when you get over into the statutory processes, maybe licenses. You shouldn't need a license to practice law. The Supreme Court has
ruled
on that.
None of it should be statutory.
So that
statutory
means that you
should be common law.
That means you should be able to walk into a court and represent someone or yourself in a particular jurisdiction under a certain title. And so on. But, if you're going to go out and look for someone to represent you, and you're not representing yourself because you don't have the knowledge, you're going to want to have somebody who has been schooled in that area. Not necessarily, could
right.
be homeschooled.
A lawyer, a lawyer that knows the law well.
Yeah. That's where a test would be appropriate to prove that they have made certain experiments and that
they're
competent
professional in law. Right.
So, we don't want to throw out the baby with the wash water, you know?
Well, I mean, somebody who knows the law is a lawyer, but that's different than an attorney. Attorney is a title of nobility.
I'm going to look into that. I never looked that word up. But go ahead.
Yeah, it means like a torn, and it means they're not there to enforce law, but to enforce the will of the king or whatever, the monarchy. The comment is as far as the original 13th Amendment, the current 13th Amendment actually, in less words, outlaws all titles of nobility by saying that because nobility is a title of a privilege in violation of rule of law or common law. And so when it says there should be neither slavery and voluntary servitude except for punishment for a crime, that, in less words, eliminates all titles of nobility or foreign allegiance.
Well, say that again. I missed that.
The current 13th Amendment says there shall not be slavery or involuntary servitude except for punishment for a crime. And so eliminates all titles of nobility.
That was recorded as the 14th Amendment in a couple of states. I think Connecticut was one of the states they found it in.
Oh, okay, that's true. And then they moved it once. But the thing is that says the same thing in less words. And I think that does the job plenty well enough. If it was just enforced, there would be no titles of nobility in government.
Well, right, exactly. But if you go back and look and read the 13th Amendment and the 13th Amendment that's in place where the real 13th Amendment should be, and you look at the 14th Amendment, if I recall, the 14th Amendment I think is just a one-liner, and it easily fits right in what we see as the 13th Amendment. So that's what they did.
I read the other one.
They divided that in the 14th Amendment. They divided it and made part of the 13th and the 14th, and it disappeared, back in
the Civil War period, after the Civil War.
Somewhere in there, it disappeared. Maybe a little later than that, but it disappeared. And but Connecticut and another state, I know we have it in our memorandum on the 13th Amendment.
But the main problem is they're not even enforcing the current 13th Amendment, which would eliminate all these titles of nobility.
We would get rid of
All licensing is titles of nobility. Well, it's titles of counterfeit nobility.
I wouldn't go that far. No. Look, licensing is required for certain things. In certain commercial activities, a license should be required. And
it should be a certificate, not a license. Certification, in other words. Not
out and operate, if you go out and operate in some kind of a commercial activity that, and you don't have that certificate, then what?
Well, then you're violating your duty to prove competency so that you're not murdering or killing people on the road, you know.
Well, I guess, but again, I don't really see
licensing means privilege, and that's a violation of rule of law or common law.
I think it means control. And again, you know, I have to look a little deeper and think a little deeper on that. But I think it means control. You know, you go read the Article 8, Section 1, Article 1, Section 8. I mean, matter of fact, Brent was talking about that today, and he was looking into those articles and 8. And but if you go look into Article 1, Section 8, and you see the very specific, approvals we give for them to make law and to control. And I have to think about that when I read that now and consider the meaning of licenses. I don't really see a problem in that area. You know, I really don't.
Well, license means that it's not based on law. It means they can make up any rules they want whatsoever without any regard to your rights. That's what licensing means.
I don't know if that. You know,
definition of the word, is what I'm saying.
Well, you got a point there, I think, because, you know, when you get involved with something in an administrative level and you're participating with something that you're now falling under administrative process or authorities, okay, whether they be regulations or if you call them statutes or codes or regulations. Regulations is one of the key things, okay. Then you for instance, people who are under regulations because they have certain authority. Usually, you're under regulations because you're working for some government agency, okay? And there's a code and the regulations to be kept and have to be followed. It's like policies and procedures. You know, when I was doing construction, I had policies and procedures in place.
Well, you got to have safety laws and rules. You know, that's necessary.
So you
do it through certification and registration, and that doesn't violate the rule of law and rights, is all I'm saying.
So you have a problem with the word license?
The lawful meaning of the word means that they don't have to follow law or pay any attention to your common law rights. They can do anything they want for their own profit.
I have to admit I haven't really looked into that word close enough. I mean, I know licenses don't have anything to do with us. We shouldn't have to have a license to live our life, to travel, to do anything we want to do.
No,
carry
it should
a
be certification of competency and registration of, whatever, that kind of thing, but not licensing.
Yeah.
'Cause that's...
Well, I wouldn't argue with that. I mean, but something's got to be done, and there has to be certain controls, regulations, and codes, and
there
whatever.
There has to be accounting of competency
restrained.
And safety and that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and people have to be restrained sometimes from abusing their powers,
and that's
they
what
do
rule
it anyway.
Law does, and licensing violates all that, because it's saying that they are the law, and that means they can make up anything they want, charge you whatever they want without any regard to actually public service.
I'd have to think
public
about
greed
that.
And treason.
I'm going to look up the word and think about it a little bit. So.
Okay.
Right.
Well.
All right. Well, I appreciate
visiting.
The call. I don't know if you were here last week and the week before, but we had the Memorandum of Law on the 13th Amendment, and in there we read through that the last 2 weeks. It's a long one. Let's see. It's almost 19 pages. And we do have pictures, snapshots of the Senate Report Journal. And manual, we do have a manual reference in there, refers to the 13th Amendment.
Many years ago, I learned about that and read it, but it's probably been 10-15 years. But I do remember what it was about, though, and titles of nobility and stuff like that. And
Well, that was the key word. The key change in there was adding the title of nobility and honor. And then they added, they went to really extreme there. They made it clear, you know, you have those things and you just being a citizen and you have those titles in America, you lose your citizenship, period. You're done. And you can never hold an office of honor. Okay?
Yeah,
and
well, they don't want any foreign allegiance, you know, so, yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
Makes sense. I'm just saying, yeah, they don't, you know, you can't have foreign allegiance to, you know, be a member of the nation. Right. That just doesn't work, right?
I just can't believe it was so dumb that we got that one guy that got dual citizenship. He even ran for president, trying to think of his name. He's a Canadian.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, yeah.
I mean, I can't believe he ran for president. Nobody brought that up. I can't believe he's holding office.
The thing is, the way it is today with our economic system, it's like we're basically communist anyway with our economic system. So, like,
well, the courts have made sure of that.
Make, you know what I'm saying?
Made sure of that. Look at the courts, the Supreme Court. And particularly the federal district courts have made darn sure of well to make sure that we're upholding to communistic standards, okay? Because
the whole banking system is based on it, and that's been for how long have we been basically living in communism through the banking system, and all the rest is mostly show business with a little bit of good mixed in, but
right.
Yeah, it's...
All right, well, I'm going to get going. It's 24 hours, a long night. So, all right, thanks for the call. You too. God bless. All right, Lord bless everyone. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, and we'll pick up on another subject matter next Monday. And I'm not sure which. We'll probably read another memorandum and hopefully discuss it. You know, people should really take a look at it and bring up questions or thoughts,
Amen.
So on. All right. Good night. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.